And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear. Oh, we got so much to talk about. Our trip to Panama. And I'll tell you all about it. You know, probably we're going to go ahead and do a show Monday and Tuesday, and I leave for Pennsylvania again for another week. Hey, get over it, because I can't. Okay, but I tell you, there is a lot going on down there. And I found a beach and a community of a bunch of expatriates, lots of Canadians and Americans, you know, that are living on a beach that has, let me tell you what its number one feature is, aside from its, a nice place on a beach, is that no bugs, not a single bite. I'm like, yes, this be the place. I guess it's because of the winds, whatever, no bugs. I vote that. Okay, so we had a lot of great conversation, a lot of good times, and we're going to be talking a lot about it. But today, because we're gone, we had a lot of things scheduled, you know, stuff. We got to take care of business. And what's going to happen today? In the first hour, we have Joel Ho and his father Yang. That is, he had a solution for the EMP pulse problem where electronics, no more worky, okay? This is what happened. We went to the Prepper Fest, and there was a young man there, kind of out of place. I mean, you know, he's there all dressed nice and professional and had his table, and he's got, because all these guys are concerned, a lot of the electricians and such that we know are very concerned. They said, you know what, the biggest threat we have is when they have an EMP, electromagnetic pulse, and it just takes out all our electronics, that would definitely suck. And then all your communicate, all your smartphone, all your great and new and wonderful and futuristic and technology and cars, and it don't work no more. Now what? So some of them start building their own Faraday cages or boxes, and you know they're using ammo cans and things wrapped in, you know, aluminum foil, and they're doing, I mean, a lot of these guys are taking this seriously. Joel created a bag that made it very convenient to put stuff in, and I got the impression you can still use it while it's in the bag or something and still be protected. So we definitely want to hear about that. We'll get that in just a second. Marcus West, you know, we're going to do by video Skype. He has an aquaponic setup that I thought was interesting, and it was, you know, easy, and it had a lot to, you know, to offer. So I'm going, you know, this is it. I want to talk about this. We're talking a little more about aquaponics in the second hour. In the third hour, Sean Daly, Silent Vault. Now, this is a guy that I met at the New York Bitcoin Conference a couple weeks ago, and I was there for the Made Safe. Oh, Made Safe. I told you guys, they already closed it. You can't invest anymore. They raised, heck, in 2 days, like almost $4 million or something. I'm going, yeah, yeah, yeah. Who warned you? I told you. I told you. You know, this distributed internet thing is going to be very, 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 very cool. But one of the things that I think that you need to know about is the protection against EMP is something that you can just buy. Let's go ahead and talk about it. Let me introduce you to Joel Ho, founder and CEO of MobileSec Solutions. Joel Ho graduated from NYU with a double major in finance and information systems. He worked in finance for a few years before switching his focus to helping solve the EMP problem, electromagnetic pulse. Those that don't know, when you set off a nuclear detonation, it creates an electromagnetic pulse that takes out electronics. They go, you know, we did not know that. Well, now they know that, and to the point to where you can create just the electromagnetic pulse, and you can get in all kinds of, you know, ways you can do that. But the main thing is I remember, heck, they gave a diagram on popular science or mechanics or something trying to scare you, you know, said, ooh, they could take a detonation and ram a coil down a thing of wires in a tube like a cruise missile or something and create this pulse, and it be a targeted weapon for taking out someone's electronics. So a lot of people feel that that is the greatest threat, and that would not be good, you know. Or it could happen from, you know, the sun could produce it, and then what? Which is the number one national security concern. It may very well be. Because of this, he spent the past year and a half learning about EMP facts and myths, which he will share with us. That's a good thing. We'll probably talk about that first, then we'll get to the solution. And developed the first flexible and transparent Faraday cage to protect electronics against EMP, but still allow full operational use. Yeah. Okay. We're going to find out. MobileSecSecSolutions.com. MobileSecSolutions.com. Joel Ho, I got you there?
Yep.
Okay, Joel, help me out here. Let's go ahead and talk about the EMP facts and myths. Go ahead and, you know, hit us up with some stuff before we go to the first break here, and we're going to get into the little bitty nitty gritty of it. Tell us about what you think people should know first.
Okay, the very first thing about EMP is that it's not going to be quite the end of the world, at least in terms of the number of electronics destroyed. Many people think that, oh, it's going to blow out every single piece of electronics, so nothing is going to work. That's actually not quite true. Based on our testing, we've actually gone out and gone to some EMP simulators and tested this stuff out down in Texas. What we found was that a lot of electronics, they'll be reset, and the more complicated the electronics, the more chance that you have that the electronics are also very well shielded, because each individual component needs to avoid interference with the other parts. For example, in a computer, you have so many moving pieces in there that that each generate radio frequencies that if the computer did not have shielding for each one of those parts, it would not work. So as a result, even though the computer itself is an extremely complicated and sensitive piece of equipment, there are so many components inside that are shielded that the net effect is the entire thing is actually pretty well shielded. It's not shielded enough to stand up to an EMP on its own, but you add in a few layers of our stuff, or you, for example, you put our stuff in a stainless steel mesh, which is what we do, and you can optionally coat in copper, and what will happen is it'll boost the protection of the computer to the point where no EMP will affect anything inside.
Okay, so what you're saying is that the actual because the I'll explain it this way. You have a conductive material, you know, silver on silicon or whatever it is. You have a conductive material that is so close now. They're using lasers, and the manufacturer is so close. It kind of has to be shielded against itself. I mean, it has so many electromagnetic fields in there that they got to design it in such a way that it's not turning itself off. And that process has started to protect it quite a bit. But you get a nice, good little pulse going on, you're going to have issues. And when you talk about reset, what does that mean? Does it wipe the memory or something?
Oh, no. What happens is, for example, if you get a pulse at, say, 400 megahertz, what will happen to your computer is you'll basically just, it'll literally like be somebody pushing off the off button, at least the first few times. If you have a significant pulse that will be done over and over again, that might be a different story, and your computer will probably be fried. But on a one-off occasion, based on our testing, it seems that the most likely effect on a large number of electronics is to basically turn them off, and then what will happen is, as long as you push the power button again, the electronics should boot back up.
If I'm in a military,
there will be accumulative damage.
If I'm in a military industrial, I want to protect and it keep working and not get turned off. I'd want to shield it where it doesn't get turned off, I would imagine.
right, exactly. Because there are actually countries out there that have EMP missiles, I believe, and they may or may not have tested these.
When we come back, let's go ahead and find out if Joel, you know, I would think that, you know, somebody might have contacted Joel and said, hey, you know, we want to be your new best friends. We're going to find out everything with Joel Hull about EMP when we come back.
We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And maybe not any flying cars either if it got EMP'd out of the sky. You know, that's another thing, man. If I mean, that's one thing, your car turns off, but if your flying car turns off, that would suck. reboot. Be like a Star Trek episode and you crash. Okay. So, Joel Ho, we have a gentleman, young man here. He got edumacated, lots educated. And then all of a sudden, he goes, yeah, this EMP thing is something that needs to be solved. It's something that needs to be worked on, something that I can do about. And he created something. And I got, and the reason I bring this up, when I saw him, I thought it was a very elegant, simple, easy, sizable solution to what a lot of people have been just whining about. I mean, so they go, but EMP, EMP. I go, oh, what'd you do about it? Well, complained about it, EMP, EMP. I go, well, what's the solution? Somebody should do something. All right, fine. Well, here it is. You go in the first hour of today's archive, and you'll see Donna's putting up the different packages available, the link to the location. You can go to it now, mobilesecsolutions.com, mobile SEC. Okay, so what does SEC stand for? Why is it SEC, Joel?
The SEC stands for solutions. So I just didn't want to spell it all out because that just makes the name way too long, to be honest.
So we got mobilesecsolutions.com. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
All right, so we got Mobile Sec. Now this is a package that I'm looking at here. I mean, you know, this isn't really, it's a commercial. Because the reason I'm doing this, Joel, is because so many people have just been on my case. Oh, you need to do more on that. Where do you get this? How about that? I go, look, here it is. You want to know? Go to Joel. I saw it. I looked at it. I go, ooh, that's cool. And we had a couple of questions that I have, but wanted to see. Full production kit. So see, it's like for $125, $35, you get, you know, for your cell phone, for your laptop, for your this, for your that. You know, then you got, you know, cell phone blocker kit, $50. Large EMP bag, $55. Laptop EMP shield, $99. So that kind of gives you an idea of what he's doing. We have in the graphics up here. We have pictures of it. It's a see-through kind of a stainless steel mesh bag that protects it. Now, this is the question that I have. You market that you can still use the device while it's in the bag. Is that true?
Yeah, that's true. For a computer, it's basically full function because what happens is you can use wireless through it. You can type on it. You can see through it, of course. And you can even put solar panels inside and charge them up that way. So basically, it really is full function. Because the wireless access, for example, it'll be reduced as you know, any sort of a radio frequency will be. But that means if you had four bars on your computer of wireless service, it'll get cut down to two bars. That, you know, really enables you basically to, if as long as you move your computer closer to the router, you're going to be able to use it pretty much just the same way. So in other words, you can actually access the internet and still protect your computer from EMP.
Okay, now this is I know people got this. I mean, a lot of little technical questions. If I were to wrap my router in the bag. I would imagine it would reduce its distance, but you still have the Ethernet cord that's going in. Would the EMP travel along the cord? Is it only for things that, you know, like if I got my laptop and I'm using it, but if I got the power cord hooked up, am I still getting protected? Or is the power cord going to bring the surge? I mean, tell me what you know.
Yeah, the power cord or any sort of connections going into the shield, they're definitely areas of vulnerability. So you want to avoid anything going into the bag. We are thinking about making a filter to basically make sure that that isn't a problem. But at this point in time, we don't have that. It's basically, it's not a matter of how to do it. It's more a matter of cost. Like, so we know how to do it. It just, people have to really want this stuff, before, you know, we're going to make the decision, because, the filters for them, by themselves are expensive. And my goal is to make this a, very cheap and accessible product for everyone so that, you know, everyone can get EMP protection if they want it.
I'm glad that I got you to point to, because everybody, oh, we got EMP. I'm going, yeah, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, we got to build this room and we got to do this and, coat my closet with aluminum foil and do, okay, cool. But I mean, I'm out camping, I'm out, you know, working, I'm in a vulnerable time and a vulnerable place and be vulnerable. You know, I tell you what really is something that has, to me, that I think is the real higher likelihood of being a threat, is that when you go to liberty protest, when you are at a an event, when you are reporting on something, when I got all my electronics and the remote out and covering the, you know, whatever it is. Oh, I give you a good example. Here in the Southwest, they have this big Bundy rancher out there that is a big issue. And the man is coming. They're not done. And they're amassing all their forces. And the biggest threat that they have is all these damn civilians out there with their damn cell phones and their damn video and their, and damn it, you know, they're just letting everybody know what's going on, and damn it. So what do? They take a EMP pulse machine on top of, you know, backpack, you know, A-10 tank, whatever the heck, and they go, zap, oh, that really sucks, all your phones don't work now, okay? So, but the guys that got Joel Ho's bag, and they got their cell phone, they go, nah, mine works. So it's a freedom protection tool as a most likely application, in my opinion. So this is, I go, so if you're going to be going on something and, oh, it's the big giant bad guys being big giant bad, you know, it would be nice to have these bags to keep your stuff protected so that you can use it when you need it the most, because that's when you're not going to be able to use it, is when you need it the most, and the man don't like it, okay? So, and a man could be, you know, from this country or another or not, or kind of, it doesn't matter. But that, for me, I would think would be the highest likelihood of a vulnerability, is when you need to communicate the most in the face of tyranny, because if they can, they will prevent you from communicating what's really going on. So that's where I see the application for this is. Now, let's go ahead and talk about why you did this. I mean, all of a sudden, here's a, you know, well-educated, good-looking young man comes out of school and he says, you know what, I need to make EMP bags. Why?
Well, the answer to that is, first off, I was working on Wall Street, and I realized, you know, after, you know, the financial crisis, that, hey, this is not going away. A lot of people on Wall Street know it too. This is basically something that's going to be around for a while, this entire economic crisis. Now, I can't solve that, but I've been thinking, you know, a lot of the stuff I'm doing, I didn't see too much of a point in continuing to do that stuff with all this economic crisis going on. So I decided, hey, what can I do something about? And as I've been thinking about EMP, it's been my number one, you know, concern for quite a while. I've been, like, reading about this stuff for a very long time. And I just decided, hey, you know what? I should make something, because, hey, if I don't make something, who will, right? Like, you can't keep waiting for someone else to make stuff. If you want to solve the problem, you got to do it yourself.
I vote that, okay? Because it's not who thinks of it first. It's who does it first. One of the first doers, Joel Ho. When we come back, we're going to go ahead and start talking about, you know, the other applications that this would have. And also, Has anybody, kind of guy with a shiny badge nuzzled up to him and said, ooh, we want some too, or we'd rather you not do it, or, and then the testing process. You know, where did you go to test this? How many things have you tested? Were you surprised with what you found that you tested? I mean, there's so many things that we have, because this is the first time we've had someone that's had a marketable You Go Buy It solution.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock. Hello. What we want to do is learn about EMP. We want to learn that there's a solution. We want to learn that there's some place you can go buy, get, make, do the solution. You know, but I tell you, the thing that's interesting to me is that a young man actually went out and did some testing. He said, you know, let's do some testing. We need to, you know, make sure we test this. Now, when you did the testing and you needed to create electromagnetic pulse, I would imagine that they have some standard, oh my goodness, this would be really bad if this happened. One, I need to know what this is, what level of power it would be, how would it be generated, and how you recreated it for your testing. Help me out with that, Joel, will you?
Sure. So military standard RS-105 calls for a voltage of that 50,000 volts per meter. At about 400 megahertz for testing. Now, what a lot of companies do is the companies that make these testing facilities or testing equipment, they basically make something called a MUX generator, which generates voltages in that range at much higher levels. So the testing facility we went to down in Texas, where they make some of these EMP simulators, it was probably 160,000 volts. From that, the amount that actually made it inside our shield was 16 volts. And this is with a connection into the shield. So in other words, there was actually a hole, which is supposedly not allowed, but with a hole even, we got it down to 16 volts, which your computer can still handle. There was no damage at all to anything inside.
Okay,
so, that's the level of that's basically the level of attenuation that you would need generally across the board.
Okay, now that's generated by a what?
A MUX generator.
Wow, what the heck does that mean?
It's basically a device that generates this. It basically lets a charge build up, and then after a certain amount of time, it lets the charge dissipate. So, or rather, discharge itself.
So it's like a capacitor or a coil on a car or something. I mean, it builds up and it just goes boom, electromagnetic pulse, and then you get the test stuff.
Right. I would compare it like maybe a little bit like a build up to a lightning strike. It's something kind of similar to that.
Okay, now a lightning strike is a threat from a lightning strike of messing up all your goodies. Is that the electromagnetic pulse that we're worrying about, or just a voltage thing, or is there a difference? So this is like a lightning strike protector kind of thingy too, right?
Yeah. The basic idea is that lightning strikes are actually relatively slow compared to an EMP. So the idea is the EMP pulses, we're talking nanoseconds, where the lightning strikes take a little more time. And EMP overall, there's three components to it. E1, which is a very fast rise time pulse, which will that'll come through very, very quickly, a couple nanoseconds. E2, which is similar to a lightning strike, and will take up to several seconds to a little longer than that. And then E3 will take up to 10 minutes to fully pass through an area. So we need to protect against these pulses. Now, with E3, which is actually similar to the solar flare component that people are worried about, that E3 is very easy to protect against on small electronics, because all you have to do is to make sure that your stuff isn't connected to antennas or long wires. So as long as there's no metal stretches or pieces of equipment anywhere around your equipment, in connection with it, then E3, you're automatically protected. It's not a big deal. So the only things that you would really want to worry about in that case are stuff like radios that have, you know, extremely long antennas, that sort of thing, and, you know, power connections. But as long as you're not connected to the power grid, E3 is not a concern. So our main concern is E1 and E2. And that's what the stuff we have is designed against.
Okay, so I would imagine that I had not seen some commercially available, simple, easy, I get to still use it, products that have your features like this. I haven't. I was kind of surprised I haven't. And then I'm even more surprised I got a young man there going, well, I got the solution. And I'm going, well, bully for you, okay? So have you been contacted, you know, by people? I mean, if they said, hey, what you got, I want. The military, are there other competitors out there? I mean, tell us about, you know, how the response has been to your product.
Well, actually, I've been putting this product on the market for about 6 months. And so, you know, it's been building up steam because I actually sent this stuff to the military, like to various various groups within the military. And the response so far has been pretty positive. Like, I have been hearing back to some degree, and basically the groups that I've been in contact with, they're interested and they're willing to, you know, start like looking into having meetings and, you know, discussions about this stuff, and from that, you know, we'll see how things go. Basically, you know, military procurement process is a relatively slow compared to the commercial market, but for these guys, they are interested and they're working. So for the military, yeah, they're doing they're very interested and they're working on it very quickly.
Okay, now this going to a you know, for lack of a better term, it's Prepper Fest is kind of like a gun show without the guns, okay? But it's a lot of people that, you know, kind of got past a, we're not going to, you know, once more into the breach, and we're going to, you know, beat up the man or protect against the man, and we're good. They're just like, you know what, we're just going to, you know, like, survive and thrive, and we'll just got solutions, and if we're growing food and protecting our electronics, you know, we'd be all good. So I saw that was it like a big surprise that someone with a product like yours would have been there? I think you'd had a good market, and I'm sure there was a lot of interest, but it's I was more surprised that there wasn't someone like you there earlier. I mean, I'm going, finally, you know, and then to have a young man, you know, up there doing, I'm going, good, about freaking time. I hear all these guys whining, and nobody had a solution that I have ever seen for years that people have just been building up. So I think there's a market for you. Tell me how your experience at that event went. I mean, were there a lot of people interested in what you had to offer?
At that event, I actually did pretty well. It was one of the best events that I've had selling this stuff, because the main thing is people are rightly skeptical about all the EMP products out there. They want to make sure that this stuff works. Now, yes, I got the videos to prove it, but people are still skeptical. They want to see, like, you know, this stuff has what the military uses. You know, basically they want to see those sort of things so that they're reassured that, hey, this stuff isn't just the main problem is, how are you going to get your money back after an EMP if it doesn't work, right? Everybody's worried about that sort of thing. So that's the major fear I have to overcome. But I'm happy to say that at that event, it was a really good good event and turnout for me. So I was very happy with that.
Well, I think, you know, there's a lot of, are you here in Arizona?
I am actually not. I'm actually on California based primarily.
Well, you know, there's a lot of gun shows here, and I know a lot of the people that, I give you an example, the Crossroads of the West gun show has probably 1,200 tables. Tens of thousands of people go through that. I don't know how expensive it is for a table. I'm sure it's not free. But I tell you, these are the very guys that are been just screaming about this EMP thing. And there's some of them kind of overlapped at the Prepper Fest. They came. I would bet you would do very well. And it would be a big favor to me just to get them to shut their face. I'm so tired of them whining about it and not having a solution. Now, the thing is that you, in your testing here, I saw in your video we showed that you have, a lot of people had talked about using ammo cans. You know, you can, you know, put your stuff in there and kind of loom tape it, and there's different things that you can do and you're protected. But I tell you what the difference is with that. You don't get to use it. And what your solution is not only is it protected, hello, I get to use it. yuck, 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 yuck. And when does that come in? What, my little activist mind, what makes me think of that? Oh, that makes me think you need to go up to the Clive Bundy standoff and say, hey, I got a EMP bag for y'all.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies.
Lies, 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 lies. Let's break free from the lies and get some truthifying done. You know, I tell you, this is one of the things is there's all these myths about EMP. Now, it's, be afeared of what? I mean, how do you? It's all going to, and your cells will, you'll boil from an EMP, and your brain will stop working. You kind of won't be in the, and you got to live in a box or something. I mean, we need to know, from someone that actually, cared to ask and find a solution. Joel Ho from MobileSexSolutions.com. And you go to today's archive and you'll see all the goodies there to contact them and such. But, I need to know, what are some of the myths? I mean, that you thought you had, you knew, you found out, people ask you. Help us out with that, will you, Joel?
Yeah, the biggest concern that most people have is, hey, how do I get something to EMP protect my car or something like that? And I tell them, hey, you don't actually need to, because according to the EMP Commission report, they wrote a report and they actually tested 37 cars. Out of those cars, I believe about 7 experienced some bigger problems, and 3 actually failed. So in other words, your odds of your car failing while it's being driven is less than 10%. So in other words, you got a 90% chance your car's going to be okay during an EMP. It doesn't matter what year your car is, according to the test samples done by the EMP Commission.
Really? So, what I like checked is my Tesla Model S.
I have some other issues with that car, but that's something, let's not even go there.
Why? I mean, we can go on and on, I'm sure. We'll do that in the break. But the my position is that that is where the biggest fear is generated for a lot of people, to the point that I know people that have ordered new black boxes or whatever. They're like electronic control boxes, and they put it in a box, and they put it in a ammo can, or they do something with it, say, I'm going to have mine when I need it, or the electronic ignition or something. They think that, one, they need to be protected, and two, that that'll protect them. So you're saying that, you don't want to be the 10%, but I mean, that in general, that the credible threat of the intensity of the EMP that they're worrying about, your car probably is going to keep driving. But I'm wondering, at what strength did they do the EMP pulse? And if I got, terrorist organization, De La, whoever, USG, is over here going, boom, electromagnetic pulse with a missile of whatever, and I go, okay, and my car just keeps going in general? Is that what you're saying?
In general, yes. Now, they only tested frequency, I believe, up to 50,000 kilovolts, 50,000 volts. So they were testing cars like 25,000. And in our testing, we tested up to 160,000. So, a few times more. That military weapons, On the nuclear scale, they can go as high as, I believe, theoretically 300 kilovolts, so 300,000 volts. That has not actually been seen yet, on you know, at least on an unclassified basis.
Well, see, okay, this is my point. If you're getting to where, hey, my car still worked, of course I'm melted in my seat and fried, you know, or the blast wave, you know, took out, you know, a 20 kilometer radius or something, and your EMP is like, you know, least of your worries.
Right, yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. If the EMP can go across the entire country, so that's not so much a concern, but at the field strength, a lot of electronics would be affected. There's no doubt about that. But what's more surprising to me is that how many of them would actually survive. So it's not like, you know, everything will break down. My actual big concern is what will happen to the power grid and specifically the nuclear power plants if cooling systems, for example, go offline.
Okay. Well, you know, hopefully they got some backup to something, and they thought about this EMP that, heck, they might generate. You never know. But
that's the problem, actually. That's my main concern is because they haven't done that sort of thinking.
I'm so shocked. Yeah. I'm so shocked. Well, you know, I'm glad you thought about it, and you came up with a solution, and you have an opportunity to do some sales. But, you know, this is, what's the role your father has in this? I know he's excited about you doing this. What's going on there?
Oh, my father is, he's basically been helping me just make sure, you know, he's an electrical engineer, so helping me make sure that I understand, you know, the physics of this stuff correctly. That's his main, you know, contribution in this area. And yeah, he actually helped build a Mark Stern generator that you may have seen in the videos on our website.
Well, this is awesome.
A smaller scale than what, you know, a large scale testing facility will do, but it works pretty much the same way.
Okay, now this is, you know, really awesome that you have, you know, a father and son working on this, and both of them well-educated and engineered and went and see the need and provide the product for. And so, I mean, how often does that happen? Like, let me see, like almost never. So have there been other events you went to? Why did you go to the Prepper Fest in Arizona? How'd that even get on your radar screen?
To be honest, I was thinking about the most bang for my buck, and I was looking at survival events being one of the number one areas, because, I mean, I would consider myself a prepper, so I'm looking at all these prepper events, and, hey, it's fun to go to for me as well, and to also see what everyone else is doing. And, of course, a lot of people are concerned about EMP, and so, you know, finally I got a solution. You can even put your solar panels inside and protect everything you got. Really?
Gun shows, gun show, gun show, gun show, gun show. You go here, gun show. 10,000 gun show. You see my point? You know,
I mean, gun shows are, they're, you know, depends on which ones, but yeah, some of them are pretty good for me as well.
No, the Crossroads of the West, I'm telling you, they are huge, and the people that you, most interested people that were showing up at your booth and everything, I see them at the gun shows, and these are the ones that are, because if you're prepping, let me tell you what's one of the first things you get. Let me think. Oh yeah, guns, okay? So, and ammunition. So this is, I highly recommend that, because I know what the response is. If you got a good response at the Prepper Fest, you go to Crossroads of the West gun show circuit, and I'm telling you, you're going to be doing just fine. I don't know what your position is on guns, but your position on making money is probably there. So this,
I like guns. I'll put it that way.
All right, let's put, you know, pace. Okay, real quick, you got just a couple minutes. You had to diss on, you know, Tesla a little bit. What's your concern with having electric cars? They're all going to get fried.
It's not so much of an EMP concern, I would say. I mean, I haven't looked at the designs for it, and, you know, of course, every car is different. So my concern with Tesla is more about the lines of them going boom.
Oh, you know, from the batteries, you know, just...
Yeah. That's, but, if, you know, like, you know, they have their position, but they added, basically, body armor to the bottom of the car, so to prevent any shield strikes from, rather, like, any sort of a piece of debris or whatever from hitting the bottom of the car and causing it to go boom. That tells me that they have a problem.
Okay, well, I'm glad they... Yeah, no, if you got that much energy and you go making a... a short circuit with something from the road go, I would imagine that would be a lot of energy release, so you need to protect against that. So this is, I'm really glad that you did this, you know, and we had an opportunity to talk to you, because there's so much concern. It keeps coming up a lot, and that's why I was so encouraged to have you on, because I always like to offer a solution. You know, people are going, yeah, but this, and you gotta, and one of the problems is I got all these electronic devices that I put up, and I store it, and I got it sitting, and I buried it, and it's in my closet, but I can't use it. You actually have a protection against electromagnetic pulse that you can use the product. And I'm going, when would that be? When you need it the most, when you are at an activist event. Now, I'll tell you where it applies to me. We have very complicated, you know, and sensitive electronics, and it's called a Comrex, you know, access. And it's a mobile device that allows me to do the radio show remotely out on location. And it's a very, very, very cool device. You can connect with Ethernet, you connect with wireless, you connect with cell phone, you connect, you know, and we can do the show anywhere. But where I would want to do the show most is where they don't want me to do it the most. I guarantee freaking to you. If we're out covering activist event, De La, whatever it is, and they go, boom, zap, oh, I'm sorry, all your goodies just doesn't work. And I go, except mine, because I went to mobilesexsolutions.com, and I got Joel Ho and his dad to help me out. You know, his father is Yang, you know, J-E-N-G, you know, hopefully I said that right. And what I want to do is just make sure that you have this young man that went and actually saw the problem, examined it, looked at the myths, tested it, offered you a solution. So there, quit your whining. You need something, you go do it. Yuck, 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 yuck. Hold on a second, Joe. I want to ask you some off-air questions. But I tell you, maybe we can get some in our marketplace. That's what we'll do. Okay, that's one thing that we have. Are you at a computer?
Yes, I am.
Go to Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com.
Okay.
At the top there, kind of banner down an inch or so on the right, you'll see it says Funding Center and Marketplace. You see where it says Marketplace?
Marketplace.
Okay, click on Marketplace. Okay, now, that is where we can take products such as yours and people doing different things, like the Hope System there. We just finished beta testing on this. I mean, we think we're about ready and start launching and filling up with more products. I mean, we just came online with this. And it's where I want to feature products like yours that just direct marketing, go straight to you, and I don't even get a cut. Don't care. Okay? That's not the point. When people buy the product, they get an email from us, and it says, hey, I see you guys hooked up, and you bought a product, and you might voluntarily want to throw a little, you know, something our way, you know, for hooking you up, and that's it. You know, and that's after you got the money. It goes straight to you. I don't see it. I don't hold it. I don't get credit card number. It sets up as a shopping cart for you because I love you long time. Okay? So go ahead and... what I'll do is I will have my producer call you and see if she can get you at least started on this and set up. Hopefully it's self-explanatory, but I think you may need to get an account number. She's going to go ahead and deal with that. If you'll hold on for a minute, I'm going to have her talk to you and get you started on this or set a schedule for you guys to talk maybe tomorrow or something. We'll get you up, okay?
Okay.
All right, hold on a second. Donna, go ahead and talk to him. Set up a schedule sometime tomorrow or something. You can just go ahead and just get him up because I want him added to that. Would you do that? Okay, hold on a second, Joel. She'll work out a schedule to get this taken care of for you, all right?
Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks, Joel. Hold on.
Good morning and welcome to Radio VR. We're broadcasting from Washington, D.C. and around the world on voiceofrussia.com/US. I'm Rick Young. Today is Thursday, April 24th, 2014.
Radio VR News.
At a visit to Tokyo, President Obama is reassuring Japan that America will rally to its side if China uses force to grab a set of disputed islands. White House correspondent Mark Smith reports.
Last fall, China upped the ante by declaring an air defense zone over the islands.
It would be a profound mistake to continue to see escalation around this issue.
Here in Tokyo, the president told reporters if China seizes islands the Japanese now administer, the Joint Defense Treaty means America will respond. Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, through a translator, was reassured.
Changes of the status quo based on intimidation and coercion will not be condoned.
Obama says the issue's the same as in Ukraine, whether big countries can ignore the rule of law and bully their neighbors. Mark Smith with the president, Tokyo.
Georgia's new and controversial gun law expands where licensed gun owners can take their weapons. Correspondent Tim McGuire reports not everyone's happy about the law.
One gun control group from outside Georgia calls it the Guns Everywhere Law. The new measure allows gun owners to carry weapons into bars and, under certain circumstances, schools, churches, and government buildings. Republican Governor Nathan Deal says the law is one of public safety.
So that people who follow the rules can protect themselves and their families from those who don't follow the rules.
Under the new law, religious leaders have the choice to allow or ban guns, and school boards would have the option of letting licensed employees carry weapons on school property. I'm Tim McGuire.
The U.S. Supreme Court says there are limits to the
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Youthful Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. I'm back from Panama, where there's a bunch of interesting things going. We get to talk about that next week. But we already had this today filled up before we even left, so we're going to have to talk about it next week. I'll put you on the edge of your seat for next week. Okay, one of the things is that, you know, it's always going to come down of food. Let me tell you, in Panama, you know what they call organic, you know, this and fresh grown that and pull it off the tree and eat it right there. You know what they call that? They call it food. You know, we call it organic and all kinds of adjectives and non-GMO and non-this and better that and all that. And you know what? They just call it food. All right. Well, you know, I saw a lot of aquaponics being done. This is, I'm telling you, man, this is coming and it's coming fast. We started covering it at least 4 or 5 years ago. You know, a friend of mine saw them doing this in a gazebo that was a hot tub. The whole thing was turned into an aquaponics. The actual spa was where the fish went, and then they had walls of food all around it and trays and so on growing stuff. And she thought that was so cool. She said it to me. She goes, wow, these people, I mean, they got fish and vegetables on a regular, more than they can consume. We just came back from our trip a week. I said, Donna, you got to start all of the food that we produce for our aquaponics system. I'm like, man, I'm going to be a juicing SOB next few days here before we got to go to Pennsylvania next week on Wednesday. We'll be gone for another week as a family thing. My, her grandmother turns 100 years old. And she eats lots of vegetables. So we're going to go be, trying to harvest a lot of the stuff that we got here. I'm going to juicify everything. And one of the other gentlemen that was there that, you know, saw this as an opportunity was a guy named Marcus West. And I was, you know, impressed with his setup. You know, he had, you go to UrbanKabuki.com. Urban Kabuki, KABUKI studios.com. And he has kind of a hack on freedom thing. You know, he's doing it. Let's go ahead and just say hello to Marcus. I got you there, Marcus.
Yeah, I'm here. How's it going?
It's going well. So tell me, you know, where do you live? What prompted you to go to the Prepper Fest, and what was it that you presented, and why? I mean, let's go ahead and get to know Marcus. Tell us everything.
I live in San Antonio right now, and the reason I did this aquaponics thing is because I got tired of paying high price for GMO veggies and stuff and not knowing what I was getting at the store. So I just started experimenting and came up with this system.
Let's go ahead and describe your system.
I used intermediate bulk containers. And if you don't know what they are, they're huge. There's one picture on the page there that I have water in, but it's they store oil and food oil and stuff in it. And I cut them up and made grow beds out of two of them and used the bottom of another one for my fish tank. So it's about 225 gallons for the fish tank. And three grow beds are 12 inches deep. And I set them up on these bricks out here with these big, huge like logs I got from Home Depot or someplace for like a dollar each. And I set everything up on that and put a auto siphon system in there. And I just have one pump pumping the water in, and the water comes out by gravity, what they call a auto siphon.
Yeah, we call it a bell siphon.
Yeah, you know? It's a bell siphon.
You know, the Egyptian that thought that up gets a gold star in my book. You know, I wish I'd known that before. I could have used that for so many things. And it's such an easy way of siphoning down something like had you learned of this by doing the aquaponics, or did you know about this before, or what?
I just read a lot of stuff online, and then I went and I found a place that I think the University of Hawaii had a PDF file on how to make bell siphons according to the size of your tank, and they have like different sizes for different capacities, and I just followed their instructions and it worked. So I got one of them that's 2 inches. You could see in the picture in those big grow beds, I have three auto bell siphons that work excellent. They cycle every 4 times an hour, and they work great.
You know, I just had a friend of mine that lives out in West Phoenix in the desert there, and I was coming back from a trip and left him a message. Hey, I'm back, and we need to get together before I got to leave again, and so on. He goes, hey. He just turned on his aquaponics system. He goes, holy crap, look at this. And it was just, you know, he used a similar, well, he got trays from Lowe's or Home Depot or something. Yeah. They were the trays that you mix concrete in.
Yeah, I have two of those, those for grow beds too, but the bell siphons are just 1 inch instead of two. So I've got two of those. Yeah, we'll grow wheatgrass in those.
So this is, you're expanding. Is it easy to, once you get it going, you just keep expanding? Are you expanding the fish population, or do you just, you have enough fish there that you can just keep making more trays?
I have goldfish in there now. I had tilapia in there, and I didn't realize that I needed a heater this winter, and it got like 40 degrees and killed my fish. But
I learned that very lesson myself.
I spent like $100 worth to buying tilapia, and I had them in there, and they died. But I got goldfish in there now. I started them with goldfish. Somebody told me you could use goldfish to get the bacteria and the ammonia started. So I still have my 9 goldfish in there now, and that's what's been the thing going. But you can expand. I can expand this. I just buy those intermediate bulk containers. You can get them anywhere from like 50 to 75 bucks, and you just cut it out. And one bulk container will make 2 12-inch grow beds.
And then, I've seen this before. You know, they take the bottom and the top of it, and you get two of the grow beds, and they'll take another one, and they cut the top off, and you got your tank, and you're done.
Right. So you can essentially, with two intermediate bulk containers, you can get three grow beds, because you cut the top off of one, and then the other one you have. So you get three grow beds like I have in those pictures. I had my system on the side of my house, and I just moved it out here to the yard about a month and a half ago. But yeah, you can just keep adding on to it.
I need you to keep looking at the screen, because you keep looking at your thing that we don't see, and you go off mic.
I'm in my room, and I can see my aquaponics system in my backyard.
I know. but you're not facing the mic when you do that.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
it grows. I mean, you see the pictures in it. I have a because I juice like mad. I juice probably 35 pounds of veggies a week.
And so, that keeps up?
No, I got to buy vegetables, but eventually it will. I mean, it's you know, it's still in the early stages of growth now. I probably go through 10 pounds of carrots a week, but I buy them at some grocery store. I think Sprouts or somebody. I think they have that in Phoenix.
Oh, yeah. We're in the same boat. One of the big reasons why we did it was because the same thing. I juice every day, and I spend so much money on the vegetables. I go, heck, it's worth growing our own stuff. I got a whole crop out there I'm going to try and blaze through here in this next week if I can get through most of it. When we come back, we're going to find out, you know, Marcus, he works for the government. He's a government man. And you know, what? Oh, no. You can try and redeem yourself when we come back. Everybody's on the edge of their seat going, he worked for the government? You know, well, we're going to find out what he does. And if, this is in conflict in any way, we'll find out when we come back. Marcus West.
While our satellite channel is free to listen to, it's not free for us. You can help us cover our satellite costs with the chip-in on the right side of the page at lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, I'm still communicating with, David Irvine from MadeSafe is going to hook me up, you know, he get me taken care of. I come in to Las Vegas, and I turned on my phone because I was in Panama, and to use your phone or data plan or whatever, it's $5 billion, $1 trillion, I just turned it off and did with some Wi-Fi access every now and then. I'd do a little Gmailing from my phone just to, I was on vacation, get over it. But what happened was, I told him, I said, look, I'm going to be in Panama on the launch of the MadeSafe thing, and I got to wait until the Thursday I get back. I think he goes, nah, we'll have plenty, you're fine. Within 2 days, they were done, gone. Raised, I don't know, $4 million or something like that. And I said, hey, man, help a brother out here. I mean, what the heck? And he goes, hey, you know, I'm sorry. You know, I tell you what, I'll sell you some of mine. We'll hook you up. So tomorrow or next week, we'll get it taken care of. He's like, you know, so you deserve it. We'll take care of you. I'm sorry, man. And I'm going, oh, because I got a bunch of messages on my phone. I go, hey, there's none left. I go, I told you, we did a 4-day countdown to this being launched. And the safe coins for this project, we'll talk about it next week. I'll get David on, you know, when he's got some time, and we'll hook it up. But I'm going, hey, man, I've been pumping this like crazy. And I go to do it, and the sale's over already. You maxed out. And I'm going, damn it. You know, so this is, so he'll get it taken care of. I knew he'd probably take care of me. But, you know, so my thing is that this concern of the future and things that are happening and solutions, people are, what do we have in the last hour? A young man that well-educated, his engineer father, they come up with EMP bags. Now, I bet you Marcus might remember that kid there, you know, that had these bags, you know, that you can actually use your devices and they still be protected from EMP. Then you have guys out there that just like, you know, hacked freedom themselves, growing their own aquaponic thing, and they came to the Prepper Fest, and he's in Texas. And I got to ask Marcus, and Marcus, you know, tell me, brother, you know, you did you anticipate there would be such interest and development of this aquaponics thing, or you thought you'd be first?
I think I came in, and it was already pretty much heavily going. I just added to the frenzy, I guess.
Now, tell us what you do, you know, with your government check. What do you do for your government check?
I actually work for the Army Corps of Engineers, unfortunately.
Well, that's, you know, like building stuff. At least they're not blowing stuff up.
I build stuff for the all over the world for these guys to support the Army, but only got 2 years left, and then I'm leaving. Okay. Live somewhere else.
Okay. Now let me ask you this question. Here is someone that travels the world. You see the military in action. You're building whatever the heck you're building. You know, at least you're building something. But the as you're around the world, I mean, I would imagine the indigenous peoples, you're seeing that something like aquaponics, you're going, you know, I could cure a whole bunch of your problems with an aquaponic setup. I mean, do you see the need worldwide for this kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of places that could that they could use that. But I think a lot of people now with internet are seeing that, so they're building it themselves because they're all over the place. I've seen them in the Philippines and the Far East and everywhere.
You know, that's where they, I think, when I saw it in Ecuador, they got it from, it was some gringo that, you know, moved down there, and they had seen this process years ago. It was used, I think it was Thailand or Vietnam, or it was somewhere in Asia, that they had ponds of fish, you know, that, you know, they, you know, had it feeding their vegetables, and kind of, that was just how they did it. I mean, it's go, oh yeah, we've been doing this for thousands of years, you know, white man, dummy. You know, what'd you think? It's not that hard. So I'm going, okay. So this is something, do you think it's been kept from us? Or was it something we knew and forgot? Or they just didn't want us to know to begin with?
I don't know. I just think maybe people just didn't know.
Well, they know now. Is this a...
Yeah, because of the internet, a lot of people can find out stuff like me. I did all my research online, and then I decided, hey, you know what? I'm going to build it with these intermediate bulk containers.
You know, that is a popular...
I've seen a YouTube video of a guy in Australia that showed you how to do it with just one. So I thought I'd just expand on that.
And how these, when they're empty, you go and you get your pickup truck. You can get at least one or two or three, however high you want to pile them, do the Philippine I got rope thing. But, I mean, you know, these are... not that heavy. I mean, one guy can kind of maneuver them in his pickup truck.
One person can maneuver them around. And then the frame comes off with a few screws, so the whole plastic container can be taken out. And then you take it to the car wash, and you wash it out. And then you wash it out at home, and then you make sure that there's no chemical. You need to get the ones with the green caps, because that's food was inside. Because some of them have... I have one that had some kind of drilling oil or something was in it at one time, so I had to clean it out really well. And
okay, so that's a good thing to know. If it comes with a green cap on it, then it has some food.
That means that there was food quality oil, they say, was in there, like, you know, McDonald's oil or whatever those junk food places use oil.
You know, that's another thing. A lot of these, they have... you know, valves on it that you can use for a lot of different things. And I remember, you know, heck, some of those valves are cost as much as the damn container used, you know, if I go buy them new. So I'm going, you know, there's and where did you get them? How would you suggest someone here to go get these?
Craigslist is where I got mine. But then I had a friend of mine who gave me one. But if you go, they're all over the place. There's probably not a city in America that you can't find these at.
I just see them all over. How much?
List. Huh?
How much?
Don't pay more than $75 for one. There's people out there that know that aquaponics people are using them, and they're gouging you for like $150. I wouldn't pay more than... Sometimes they have so many in some cities that they give them away. You just pull your trailer, hey, yeah, we need to get rid of these off our property.
All right, Donna, go check out, you know, and it's called IBC.
Intermediate Bulk Containers.
Intermediate Bulk Containers, IBC. Go ahead and do a Craigslist search right now, would you, Donna? And go ahead and see IBC, Intermediate Bulk Containers on Craigslist, and just give me an idea of how much they are. And I would also look for food grade too, and just know, you know, we need to go get us some. You know,
the pictures will probably have, if the people have pictures on them, and you can look at the cap on top. Like, I have some that have red caps, but some of them are green. I think they have one that's black. I'm not sure, but you can use any of them. You just clean them out really well.
You know, this is the one thing that we would go and we price these, and a lot of these, the same kind of tray that you would use here, at least $75 just for one tray. You know, and it's just a lot of, we got a nice setup from Endless Food Systems. You saw them there at the Prepper Fest. And EndlessFoodSystems.com, they got the whole system all hooked up for you. If you're not one of these guys that wants to go out there and, you know, build it all and do it all, they got the whole system. They've been, you know, it is plug and play, you know, and it's more money, but I tell you what, a whole bunch less effort. Well, sometimes you get guys like Marcus West that says, you know what? I happen to work for the Army Corps of Engineers. I do this myself. Well, more stuff he's done when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
And I'm back. I'm over there emailing David Irvine. Man, this MadeSafe thing has taken off. I told you guys didn't do it. I'm like, you know, sucks to be you. It sucks to be me because I was in Panama. But I come back and I go, hey, man, everybody's saying it. They're already sold out. Help a brother out. So he has some set aside for me. Personally, he'll take care of me, and it's all good. But I tell you, the next thing we're going to be doing, it's the farming. I mean, Bitcoin, they call it mining, but he goes, that's a destructive process. We farm, like aquaponics. So we're going to go ahead and set up computers here. He's going to help us out with that. We'll get it all set up, get our computers. We'll have him. We're going to be farming us some SafeCoin. I can see the future. I mean, this is a whole different. I'm looking for the solution. So it was really good to see Marcus there as an Army Corps Engineers guy showing all of his. He just wanted to share. He came out and said, hey, looky what I did. You know, was there, did you have things for sale? Why were you at the Prepper Fest, Marcus? What were you trying to accomplish?
I think we need to straighten up. I met you at the Nomad Capitalist event in Vegas, not the Prepper
Fest. Yeah. I was going to Donna. I'm saying, well, she goes, yeah, it was an aquaponics guy. I go, which one? I'm going, look at it.
At the Nomad Capital.
That's right. I remember. Okay. I was confused because they had an IBC guy there at the Prepper Fest here a few weeks ago, too. That's right. Okay. Thank you, Marcus. Now I can place the guy. All right. This is what, because we just had another guy from the Prepper Fest. I thought they put it on the same day. Marcus was at the Passport to Freedom event in Las Vegas, where you had Nomad, you know, the young man that put that on, Henderson. There was Charles Goyette and myself and Peter Schiff were speaking there. And I, you know, in my presentation, I just, you know, mentioned kind of something. He goes, hey, I'm doing some aquaponic stuff, too. And I go, well, get your butt on the show. I didn't know it'd take 2 months to get you on, you know.
Sorry, I was because I have a little film by that Urban Kabuki studio thing. That's my little film production company on the side. So I was out filming, you know, different kind of things. So
well, tell me what your Urban Kabuki thing is, too. You were saying something about that.
Oh, now, me and my son and another friend of mine have a movie production company where we film videos. We're like cinematographers. We build our own equipment, and we just make movies and whatever people want, we shoot for them. You know, little movies, little skits, stories, feature films, whatever that can. We edit it and everything ourselves.
God, sounds like Army Corps Engineers got you bored, man.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I am pretty bored. I'll be done with them in a couple of years, and then I'm leaving. I'm going to live somewhere in another part of the planet.
Well, what's your rank?
I'm not an officer. I'm a civilian.
Oh, you still have a contract with them, I imagine, huh?
I'm just a government employee. I work, you know, like I put in there, I work for the draconian government.
So why 2 years? They got a gun to your head, or is that when you get your retirement?
I'll be 62 and a half in about 3 years, and I can retire, and then I'm going to take, as a matter of fact, that's another thing I'm doing. I'm going to Cambodia here in about 2 months and take all my information and everything, thinking about going to retire someplace like over there. So
very, very cool. You know, as a matter of fact, that's just why I went to Panama to visit some friends that have expatriated down there. They're really, you know, pushing Panama on us. And I tell you the one benefit that this particular place in Panama has, it's on the Pacific coast. It has no bugs. There's one beach, not a freaking bite. I'm on the beach, black beach, beautiful beach, 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 beach. Nice weather. It's like 8 degrees above the equator. It's a, you know, constant, you know, like, you know, high 70s degrees, great breeze. Awesome. No bugs. I'm like, you know, you so freaking, that's a big thing about Arizona. No freaking bugs. Cambodia, Lots of bugs. Bugs.
Yeah, I can deal with the bugs. I've worked in so many places on the planet, I could deal with any of that stuff.
Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, this is interesting. Now that I place you, I'm going, oh, yeah, I remember now. Heck, I thought you fell off the planet. You know, it's been so long.
I've been busy doing stuff. And as a matter of fact, when I met you, I was just moving my aquaponics system to the backyard, so I didn't have it set up. I had to take it all down and put it all back up so it could be presented the way it is. So that's another reason. But I didn't drop off the planet.
No. Okay, cool. Yeah, it's good to see you again. Now everything makes sense. I'm going, which one of the guys was this? And I'm going, you weren't any of those guys. You were the Passport to Freedom guy. Okay, now that is something that's interesting right there. Why were you there? Why'd you go to Vegas, the Passport to Freedom? Is this, you know, part of your retirement plan?
I want to save all my money from the government, and I want to get the hell out of the United States because it's going down the tubes. I mean, the dollar's going to be gone. I mean, there's this, you read about this stuff, and then you learn, and you realize, hey, you know what? It's true. It's going downhill fast. So I don't want to be here when it, I don't want to be here when it caves in. So I went to that event so I could learn what do I need to do to protect everything that I own.
Did you come away with a better feeling?
Yeah, I've done probably I've done about 80% of what he suggested so far. The only thing left for me now is to get a second passport, and I'm saving up and waiting to get money to do that, and then I'll pretty much be 100% a nomad.
Nomad capitalist. Oh, you know, that was a good event. You know, the young man that does that, he also is partnered up with the owner of our Chicago affiliate radio station. And so I'm going, okay, so this is, I'm glad that worked out for you. And a lot of people were there that were, you know, they're in the same boat. They're like, man, I'm in the know enough to know that there's something I need to know, and I'm here to get notified. And they got, you know, some information, and they're making decisions. And did you enjoy the event? Did you get a lot of information that made you feel better? Yeah.
The main thing I walked away with is that I actually came back home and depleted my savings and bought gold and silver.
Amen. I'm like, you know, seriously. You know, especially when it's under $20. Are you freaking kidding me for silver?
And I bought Bitcoin, too.
At what? What price did you get on the Bitcoin?
I think I bought it like a couple months ago. It was like 518 or something. I don't remember what it was, but I'm keeping them because I know the thing's going to rock it off.
You know, if you had spent any time on Freedom's Phoenix, you would see that we had this launch of a new madesafe.net. Look this up. You know, put this up. M-A-I-D. Safe, SAFE.net, madesafe.net. It's a totally distributed internet that's coming up. You know, NSA can't do it. It's encrypted, the whole internet, everything, not just Bitcoin. It's everything. And it has its own coin called SafeCoin that's coming on. And we counted down the launch to April 22nd, a couple days ago, to where this thing launched. And I was in Panama at the time, and I go, look, I really want to participate, but I'm not really going to be at a computer that I could do this. I'm out on the beach playing whatever. Do you think I'd be okay? I come back Thursday. I go, oh, yeah. We got gazillions of these, and don't worry about it. It's not going to be a problem. And I'm saying, I went and met them at the New York Bitcoin Conference. I'd heard about how they're going to have this distributed internet. Imagine Bitcoin for everything. I mean, the encrypted data of everything. And it had a reward called SafeCoin. And these guys were doing encrypted currencies like years before even SafeCoin. And they're ready to launch this thing. Forbes magazine is there. Bloomberg. Everybody's just, you know, dumping all kinds of attention on these guys. Loving them a long time. And we have been doing shows on it. It launched in 2 days. They raised like $4 million and they were done. And I said, hey, man, help a brother out. You know, it's like I wanted to get some. But this is going to be hopefully a lot of the salvation for a lot of the problems that you're leaving America to get away from. And I am really, this is the kind of information that, and the reason I knew that it was over is because I checked my voicemail and a bunch of complaining. They're going, hey, they closed it already. It's done. I'm going, well, I told you we did a countdown that this thing was going. Of course, I missed out, but they're going to take care of us. This is, and I tell you, it's due to guys just like you, Marcus, that have seen the problem, looking for a solution, and when they're in a free market of, I need a solution, all of a sudden, boom, shakalaka, tons of them, tons of them. Marcus, we're going to ask, now that I remember who Marcus is, we're going to have an even better conversation in the next segment, final one for this hour, when we come back, Marcus West. Yeah, Marcus, this is, see that, thank God, you know, that you mentioned that, because I'm going, you know, Marcus, which one was the guy that I, because I talked to so many people, it's become this aquaponic thing. I went to this prepper fest, it's like a gun show without guns, and they had, I'll bet you there was at least three displays they had using these IBC containers as the base for a lot of different aquaponics thing. And then there's others that were more, you know, developed and more commercialized, but, and, you know, just turnkey kind of stuff, which a lot of people need. But I can see food production, the ability to transfer money, precious metals, being able to communicate, energy, all these things are what's going to hack us away from the system, because when it goes down, it's like, yeah, and you're confusing with somebody that cares. And what you got the information at the Passport to Freedom thing is probably just a lot of confidence that you weren't the only one thinking this way and there were solutions.
Yeah, I that's another reason I do this aquaponics. If you leave, plus you want to leave, when you leave America, you want to leave healthy. If you have medical problems when you leave, then you're in trouble. But if you're healthy, by doing aquaponics system, you can leave and you don't have to worry about, you know, oh, man, I got to find a, you know, a doctor or whatever, because you don't need one.
Yep.
I'm absolutely 100%. I don't even go to the doctor.
I am going to the doctor for a checkup just to have my old man levels checked and so on, and, you know, whatever, for the first time. Like ever. I don't think I think I had a shoulder operation about 12 years ago. And even before that, I got burned real bad in like 94, 93. Yeah, no, 94. And other than that, I don't go to the doctor. I go to the feed store to get my penicillin and, you know, my cast making stuff for horses or whatever. I mean, you know, other than that, you know, I'm good. I tell you, and it's nutrition. That is a big thing. When did you get on the nutrition kick?
I've been on it for a while, but I the more I read, the more I start doing more and more stuff to get away from eating stuff that I don't know what's inside. You know, when you buy it at the store, you don't know what's in it. Like one thing I do that I. One thing that I do that you might be interested in, are you familiar with kefir grains?
You know, I've heard it mentioned before, but I am not familiar with it.
I make kefir water, and I use organic sugar and filtered water, so I can actually make my own soda. It comes out carbonated, and after 3 days, you know, you put some fruit in there, and you got, like right now I'm making some apple cinnamon. And I know exactly what's in there. There's organic sugar, apple, cinnamon, and water. And that's it. Other than when you go to the store and buy a soda, you don't know what you're drinking.
Yeah, no. I know what I'm drinking. Poison. That's what I'm drinking.
Cancer in a can, but...
Yeah, no, this is... I tell you, I can already tell that the entire medical industry, healthcare, industrial complex, whatever stuff... It's so built up around people being sick, and all of a sudden they're going, you know what? You're just making me sicker. I'll just, eat some carrots and I'm good. All right, done. And then all of a sudden this whole thing is going to start imploding on itself. And I'm going, okay, couldn't happen to a bunch of nicer people. So we're going to go ahead. Let's talk about that a little bit. Yeah, this is interesting. All right, we'll be right back.
Do you juice now?
Yes, I do. Here we go.
Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Independence with me, I'm excited. You know, Marcus, you man, you got me all inspired now, man. I'm back. You know, I tell you, you know, that's one thing that a lot of the audience and a lot of people are very interested in is, you know, what life is like somewhere else. You know, America is very nice. You know, it's a nice place. I really like Arizona, and I got grandkids here. You know, and that's one thing. As you look towards other places to go, you know, it's interesting to me, you know, why not here? There's nowhere here that you could, you know, just survive and thrive and, you know, find a lone prairie in Texas of or kind of something. You're just like, I'm going to go something now. And why would you go there? So you can, you know, have, $60 a month maids or something and get a foot massage every day for nothing? I mean, you know, what is your motivation for going to Cambodia?
One of the reasons is because they're even though people think they're third world, actually Andrew Henson was there and said it was a good place to go. They're trying to get more people to invest so they could be up to the standard of everybody else. Yeah, they're a little behind, but you know what? The more people that go over there to help the country get up on its feet, pretty soon it'll be just like everywhere else. Nice to live, you know. Nobody bothers you. It's cheap to live. Yeah. The people are nice. Nobody bothers you.
Yeah, Andrew Henson. Yeah, thank you. I forgot the gentleman's name. I've had him on the show quite a few times and in the build-up to going to Passport for Freedom, and he's in his 20s. I mean, here's the next generation going, hello, it's over here. And they don't have this. You know, that's one thing of interest I want to ask you right now. There has been the block for a lot of people to move or leave is they got this, I call them MKers, Americans. You know, America, you know, Team America. And they're so invested in America, even though that brand means, you know, tyranny and you know, oppression and taxing and you know, orchestrated, organized theft. I mean, and war. I mean, it's so many things that just, I mean, ew. That I don't have any, you know, loyalty to this, whatever the heck this Leviathan is of whatever. How did you make that break? I mean, what was it that you said, you know what, you know, I'm just not that loyal, you know, or branded or something? What happened to you?
Because I've been to and worked and been to more than like 30 countries, and I realized, hey, you know what, there's a lot more to life over there than there is here. Plus all the weird rules and laws that keep happening. I just decided, you know what? Like Andrew Henson said, go where you're treated best.
You're voting with your feet.
So I'm going where I'm treated better. It's cheaper to live. I can get better food over in other countries.
You know, Andrew,
there's a lot of countries in Europe that don't even allow half of the junk that we eat in America. You're not even allowed to have it in Europe. So that tells you something right there. You know why? You know what? What's going on, man? There's some. So I'm going.
And why Cambodia? I mean, Andrew, nomad capitalist.
Actually, to see what it's like. I haven't decided. I've got it boiled down to Panama, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Cambodia.
You know, we're doing one of the reasons why my wife and I went down there. She's in real estate and such. There is a well. I'll tell you the name of the complex where we were at. It's Rio Mar. R-I-O-M-A-R. It's on the Pacific coast. The problem is that development has two towers and they already sold out. And they have a third one they're doing, but there's another complex where they're building a wellness center that friends of ours are involved in on the beach there. And the first thing, I tell you seriously, Marcus, my first thing was I have absolutely no desire to move from Arizona where I got nice weather here that I can go somewhere and I'm going to have to contend with bugs. I am not a bug beater backer guy. I just did not want to have to deal with that. Not a single bite. I was like, are you freaking kidding? And I get a beach? You know, I'm going, yeah. Oh, sign me up. So then you look at the laws and how you're treated. And because Panama is so Americanized anyway, because of the, you know, the canal and stuff there, and they're in the middle of their every 5-year elections. And one of the benefits in Panama, every single election happens all at one time every 5 years. Like here, it's like every 5 months I got some freaking thing they want to shove down my throat I got to vote for, some bond election or something. So I'm just going, it's so bad in America, and they were able to get away with it because they conned us and tried to convince us that it was so good. And they can get away with just about anything. And they can say, oh, it's for the better because we love you and the children. And I'm going, no, it's not. And when you got any kind of experience, and the internet helps with that, then you start looking at Nomad Capitalist and a lot of what Andrew's doing. And he actually travels around the world. And he, at the event at Passport to Freedom in Las Vegas, he offered his services to people. I'm taking 3-5 people under my wing, and we're going to go do something. Were you one of those guys?
I joined his Nomad Capitalist, whatever that Nomad Club or whatever they have, where I can get information for, not the one where you travel with him. I joined that other one that he had.
And so this is what the passport thing is a big deal too. How are you going to be doing your resident status, your citizenship, your passport? Are you worried about that?
No, I'm not worried about that because I think I'm going to just get a citizenship and a passport from some other country. I know that Panama has it's still alive. They have a
permanent residency thing or
program that you can invest like $15,000 and become a resident. And there's a couple other places, but I'm still working on the passport thing because it's not cheap to do. So.
Yeah, because it's in such demand. I mean, you know, I don't want to be here. They go, you don't have to be there. It just cost a bunch of money. And what there were some friends, they invested in a teak forest. I mean, you know,
That's the one that I got information on that, too. I was thinking of doing that.
You know, that's a better nod. I mean, it's a long-term kind of, I mean, how much I got to do for, you know, teak. Hey. I see the tree. They are still green. That is good. You know, so this is, I'm really excited to hear that. You know, will you stay in touch with us and keep us informed of your progress on this? This would be awesome.
Well, because I'm actually going to, I got some people I need to meet over in Cambodia that want to talk about my aquaponic system. So I want to try to bring that kind of stuff over there as well. And my movie making stuff. I'm mainly going over there to escape, but yeah, I'll let you know. Maybe I can, give you some updated pictures when my plants get bigger, because now they're, you know, kind of early stages.
Well, it's not, I mean, this is all just, you know, frosting on the big giant cake of you realized I'm out of here, you know. And if you would go ahead and well, you know, that's a good thing. Let's go ahead and ping Andrew, ask him, you know, a couple weeks, see if he can come on. We'll talk about it and tell him we talked to Marcus and so if we can get, you know, we'll get Andrew to come back on. We'll go ahead and have keep up with what you're doing going to Cambodia. That'd be awesome, because we have friends that, you know, they're just yakking up Cambodia, you know, as the next place to go. And I'm wondering, in Southeast Asia, have you spent time there before?
I've been there. I've been to China like 30 or 40 times, but I've been all over, like Korea. I worked there for 2 years, and I've been to China, but I haven't been to Southeast Asia yet.
Is there any place that isn't, you know, you feel freer or better than America? I mean, or is America still in the top percentage, or you really feel that offense?
America's not in the top percent of much of anything on my list. Their medical is 25th in the world. Malaysia has better medical than they do in America. I'm kind of disappointed with what's going on here. So,
yeah, but we got the next election. 2016, they'll fix it.
I'll vote for Jesse Ventura and Howard Stern. They're going to run for president.
Are they really?
That's what he said.
They keep saying it, but that, you know, until we didn't get to talk about this yet. While I was in Panama, I saw that Ron Paul has done another exploratory committee for him possibly running in 2016 again. Ron Paul. Maybe you run against his son, you know? And how would he do that? They have both of them up on the stage. You know, which one's better? Or are you doing it as an independent? You know? What? Oh, that's something to talk. We ain't talking about that yet. I tell you, you know, when Darth Vader, you know, he squeezes his fist, the tighter his fist, the more star systems that leak between the fingers. Oh, and by the way, Spaceship One, what did they do? They landed the first stage last week, you know, a week before. They go up to their Dragon resupply of the ISS and then, you know, the International Space Station. And on the way, they launch 5 CubeSats for communication, private kind of outer net, leave me alone-ism. And the first stage saves 9 rocket engines. Now they come back and just land on the pad. We do it again. All things are going to get cheap. You know, and the government has always been in the way. Where's my Jetson car? Government, government, government. Well, we're leaving.
Did you know there's a way that could save you thousands on your credit card?
There we go. Thanks, Marcus. Donna will send you the copy of the show, and you can do what you want with it and everything. I am so sorry that I didn't remember how we knew each other, and I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm going, oh, well, hell, it makes more sense now.
Well, as soon as I get some more, like, when I get some more travel information, I'll ask to come on your show to share it with others.
Absolutely.
Because I am going to Cambodia to see about living there. And I want to share that information with other people who want to do the same.
You know, in addition to the laws, I'll tell you, Marcus, this is one thing that I really spend a lot of time with. I learned more in Panama from our driver that would take us, you know, to and from airports kind of stuff than I did from anybody else. Oh, well, the law, there's like, I don't give a crap about the law. I want to know what the culture is. I want to know what people want. I want to know how they're thinking. I want to know. And she is like, I think 32. She came to the United States for education in California. She moved to the United States. She met her Colombian husband there. And in 08, when the economy took a dump, they had to, lost their jobs and all this immigration crap was going on and so on. They said, you know, screw this. We're going back to Panama. She and her Colombian husband moved to Panama. They have three children. And she said in the 9 years that she was gone, Panama was a totally different country. And they're all this, but it's heavily influenced by American style kind of, you know, BS politics. But it's only one election every 5 years. And it's kind of this Democrats versus Republican thing. And it's who's going to give what the whatever. And they have banking is a big money engine there. The canal, of course, and tourism, but they don't really have any industry. And the infrastructure is just getting started. You know, they're building roads and highways, that kind of thing. So I'm going, yeah, I can see it has the seeds of just being another America. I mean, it might be really good for people to retire or move there, and it's a nice place, and it's not too far away. It's in this hemisphere. A lot of people speak English. There's not, you know, we hate America kind of thing. You know, so I'm going, all right, it's better than a lot of places, but I'm very interested in Cambodia and Southeast Asia. So whatever you find out from there, too, please let us know and keep us abreast, would you?
I will, yeah, I will.
All right, excellent. Marcus, thanks for coming on. That was awesome.
Welcome. Thank you very much.
Following the announcement of First Communion, the Holy Spookerist, the first hardcore pornographic movie to be filmed in Vatican City since 1982's classic adult feature Pope Fister's Four, Onion reporter spoke to Herschel Savage, director of the film.
It's a huge honor for me and everyone else involved with this film. This is where they shot Pope Fister's Four. I mean, that movie's a masterpiece. Well, when we wrote up the script, we sent it over to the Vatican to get the Pope's approval and see if he had any notes, but he loved it just the way it was.
The highly anticipated pornographic film, which stars Ron Jeremy as the horny himself, Pope Benedict XVI, will reportedly contain graphic sex scenes filmed in the Sistine Chapel, St. Peter Square, and the Popemobile, among various other notable sites within the Vatican.
Well, actually, I'm just watching a cut of this amazing scene we shot last night where Pope Benedict is gangbanging a bunch of nuns in his bed. And it was great because the Pope let us use his bedroom. Tomorrow, we're shooting the scene where two nuns fuck each other on St. Peter's tomb using strap-on crucifixes. I think people are really going to like this movie.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear! No fear, 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 no fear here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedom's Lunas, freedomsphoenix.com. I am very excited. It's good to come back to America, you know, from a lot of other places and find out that everybody's leaving America. You know, what do we have? We have, in the first hour, a young man doing the engineering on how to develop in his own... 20s probably, 30, comes off Wall Street and he says, you know what, you need a solution for this EMP thing, I got bags for it and doing tested and did, me and my father came up and all the guys whining about that, done, problem solved. Second hour we got the guy that I had met, you know, I had forgot, you know, where I originally met him. It was at a Nomad Capitalist event in Passport to Freedom, Charles Goyette and Jeff Borowick and Peter Schiff and myself, so on, speaking in late January this year. And he was there, and in one of my presentation, I mentioned something about aquaponics that we were doing. He goes, hey, I do that too. Come to find out, you know, he works for the Army Corps of Engineers. He's going to be retiring in a couple of years. He was there to protect my wealth, and he took, you know, advice to everybody, and he's, like, taking all his goodies, putting in precious metals when silver is below 20. And it may go down a lot lower, too. Who cares? That's not the point. U.S. dollar is going to get, you know, stupid worthless, and that's just the way it is. So what happens? He's looking to go to Cambodia. I just came from Panama. We're looking, there is a mass exodus up here. See, whether you go there or not, or get different passports or not, or transfer your wealth, it's the thinking. It's up here. How do we up here? Then while I'm gone, MadeSafe had their launch. Boom, it's done. Couple days, oh, I'm sorry you didn't get in. Well, it sucks to be y'all. Because why? Because they sold out, man. They're just like, ooh, got millions of dollars, and we're going to save the planet. Now, I went to the New York Bitcoin Conference with these kind of, you know, this mindset, you know, where, how are we going to hack us some freedom here? And I went to meet with them. While I was there, and we're talking to the guy, we're going to talk about, you know, a little bit more about the New York Bitcoin Conference. Because while I was there, I met a gentleman named Sean Daly, SilentVault.com, and you could see that, you know, from the questions and the concerns there and so on, a lot of it in New York, it was definitely how much can we get all hooked up with the government. And right when they're doing, and Bitcoin needs to be all regulated, we got to have it, you know, sanctioned by, and a line on your IRS form that says capital gains Bitcoin, you'll enter here. You know, I mean, it's just, I'm going, and they go, ooh, it's all wide adopted, and Wall Street loves it, and government loves it, and they're all lovey-dovey with Bitcoin. And I'm going, yay. You know, that's not wasn't why I was there either. Then all of a sudden, the SafeCoin launch happens. What did it demonstrate? That people understood, nah, we want to be able to be totally anonymous and outside of. One of the other gentlemen that kind of understood, I just asked a few questions. You know, the whole, you know, couple days there and everything, and the gazillion presentation and everything, I'm just like, you know, raised my hand. I said, well, you guys, to make your, all your stuff that you want to do work, you have to, like, make it illegal for people to just trade Bitcoins anonymously or on their own or outside your system. I mean, is that what you're shooting for? Is that what you want to do? Is it going to be, oh, I'm sorry, you're a money launderer? Is that what you're going to do? You'll use the force of government to make your stuff work? Is that it? You know, it's now a sanctioned monopoly kind of thing. Then you're applying it to Bitcoin. Is that what you want to do? Why, yes, of course it is. And I go, oh, that's what I thought. All right. So I'm going, as I ask these questions, people would come up to me and I go, God, thanks for asking somebody, you know, just asking at least the right question. And these people that would come up were guys like Sean Daly. I got you there, Sean.
You do, Ernie. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, I tell you, Sean, how far off am I? I mean, is that kind of the impression you got from the New York Bitcoin Conference? It was like, you know, how we're going to get ruled?
Yeah, absolutely. There seems to be this misapprehension that Bitcoin somehow requires government and regulatory oversight in order to be accepted in the mainstream. And we're dealing, as you know, with an open source project that, in the absence of regulation, has bootstrapped itself up to a $6 billion valuation and seems to be doing quite fine. So it's kind of a peculiar, but I guess not completely surprising approach that the you know, the VCs and lawyers and accountants that are attracted to the space are taking.
Well, let's go ahead and introduce you a little bit, because I found that you're from Canada, and there was a representative from the Canadian government there that made the point that, you know, when Canada kind of rendered a, we don't have an opinion about Bitcoin, don't care, all of a sudden, hey, Canada doesn't care, let's all go to Canada and do Canada. Whoa, 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 whoa. You know, we were given the memo by the central bank, and somebody said, we better freaking care, so you don't say that we don't care, because then we have to prove how much we care. You know, and I'm going, okay. So from Canada, this is, let me give you a little bit of Sean's, resume here. Former Canadian criminal defense lawyer based in Toronto. His practice focused on alternative online payment systems for internet gambling. Well, gee, I wonder if Bitcoin came up. He was an earlier adopter and promoter of digital gold currencies in the late 90s. I bet you remember about e-gold and so on. We started doing that like in 03. More recently, Sean has traded gold and silver futures and options. Currently, he is in month two of beta with Silent Vault. Now, that's why I wanted to have Sean come on. We'll talk about that. Silent Vault is a multi-cryptocurrency peer-to-peer wallet that includes a digital asset exchange and a marketplace. You know, I am on the edge of my seat on just about all of that. Go ahead and, you know, expand on that for us, will you please?
Sure. So Silent Vault really is addressing this perspective out there that is increasing in noise, that we need to pull Bitcoin towards the regulatory space. And Silent Vault really kind of is technology that freezes that debate for those that choose to allow the debate to be frozen for their own business innovation. So what we've done is created a situation where you can come in with Bitcoin and enter into an anonymous private space that you are essentially surrendering your Bitcoin for something that we are issuing, or a trust is an issuer within the Silent Vault ecosystem, and reissues you a voucher that represents your ownership in this Bitcoin that is now in cold storage. And the activity that then occurs subsequent to that is on a peer-to-peer basis anonymously between wallets. So someone looking at the activity is simply going to see a transfer from a user's on the blockchain, on the Bitcoin blockchain. They're going to see movement from an address of the user into our address, but then it's sort of frozen on the blockchain as we have it in cold storage. You can exit by redeeming that back, of course, to Bitcoin. But the beautiful thing is that there's some other interesting assets in there, like gold and silver, what we call silent Litecoin, and fiat. There's going to be we are in month two of beta, right? So people don't need to rush there right now to use it. We're in month two of beta, but things are going well. And there are two other issuers that are pretty much 95% of the way ready to go with fiat digital assets, specifically euro and the U.S. dollar, which is quite an accomplishment in today's climate to get banks that are cognizant of exactly what our business model is and what the technology provides by way of privacy and anonymity to work with us. So,
okay, all right. Well, I tell you, you got me interested, but there's 15 gazillion questions that I have, and I need to know in this, silent vault, in this cold storage, is it mine still, or is it yours, and pinky swear and Mount Gawking me, or is it, a little bit better than that? I don't know, but I know you want me to find out, and we're going to find out with Sean Daly from Silent Vault in just a little bit.
We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasy.com.
Okay, that's the first question when I come back right away is as we're doing the silent vault and we send it in and everything, am I turning over passwords and stuff to you, or is it some way that I have control of it? Am I pinky swear trusting you to do it, or what? I mean, how does that work? That's my first question.
Sure, and that's an excellent question because, you know, in the wake of Mt. Gox and now NeoMB out of Cyprus, which is a recent failing of, I guess it was just investors in NeoMB in Cyprus that lost their money, not just investors, and it's sad to see. But fortunately, there was no users in Cyprus. They've already taken a 40% haircut on their savings, so that wouldn't be good. So they hadn't actually opened to consumers.
Okay, but I mean, this, I just want you to be prepared that, you know, that here I come. You know, that's what I'm going to
Right, absolutely. And I'll preface it by saying, and I think I told you this in private, but just for your listeners.
Well, this is, all this is in the archive, so, you know, we're not live, but this will be in the archive, FYI.
Okay, great. So I'm not technical in terms of my expertise. I'm a lawyer by training, retired from criminal defense work, and in terms of Silent Vault, I'm the founder and the business development person. But I'll do my best to describe technically what's happening. If people want to dive deeper than my explanation, I'd encourage them to go to the site, and there's a lot of link throughs to something called VoucherSafe, which is really the foundational protocol or technology that we are running on. So here you're holding on in Silent Vault once you download the wallet to your own private keys. We cannot alter your balance. We have no way to get inside of your wallet. So it's just like Bitcoin from that perspective. However, when you go one layer higher for the benefit of having server-based transactions in the cloud, but server-based, you're getting speed, you're getting anonymity, you're getting the ability to move seamlessly in and out of these other assets.
Well, that we can describe this online, but I mean, you know, on the air, but the one thing that I'm seeing, I remember when we started doing eGold, it was like you had gold on deposit and it was used that in the transaction. Then we had Peter Schiff doing the same kind of thing with the Visa, but not for Americans, you know. And then it's kind of – so I'm getting the impression this is kind of where you're going with this. It's just you can do all these other different kinds of commodities and so on as another layer on top of having the Bitcoin where you can access it to do these transactions using, you know, Silent Vault. So, I mean – I'm going to start off with the Mt. Gox example, and I don't want to be a bank where I just, you know, oh, it's your money, you just can't have it now. So I just, you know, we'll go ahead and talk about that, and then we got plenty of time to get into all the nitty gritty, okay?
All right, here we go. Sure. And actually, I'm just going
to. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
And we have Sean Daly, founder of Silent Vault. Now, this is the one thing that was a big... I went to the Texas Bitcoin Conference, and there was a writer that broke a lot of the Mt. Gox information, and this is how it went. Therefore, there must be more regulation, you know, more government involved, because they didn't have any regulation, and look what they did. And all the Bitcoin guys go, yeah, well, moron... You know, it doesn't matter if you're, you know, Cyprus, they just take your money. It's Bank of America, yeah, it's your money, you just can't have it now. Or the government comes in and seizes and does and kind of whatever, and you gave them access, you know, to your password. And what do you think was going to happen? You know, don't do that. So Silent Vault, my first question is, when I put it in the cold storage using Silent Vault, I mean, is it mine? Do I have control of it? Or can they go, oh, thanks for playing, it's ours now? So the first question I have is that. Help us out, Sean.
Okay. So Mt. Gox, that, you know, disaster really points in a positive way to the ability of Bitcoin community to be self-governing and self-regulating. Everyone that I know in the space was speaking for probably about 2 years about Mt. Gox not being a prudent place to be keeping or transacting in your Bitcoins. So, you know, anyone that cared to scratch beneath the surface, then they would have known this and avoided Mt. Gox for the 24 months preceding the collapse. However, you've got the legacy mainstream media that always quoted Mt. Gox, Silk Road, and every Bitcoin story, so that newbies coming to the space were conflating Bitcoin with Mt. Gox, and that somehow they're one and the same, and the only on-ramp to Bitcoin was Mt. Gox. So, you know, really it's the mainstream media that sort of funneled so much of the new capital that came into Bitcoin into Mt. Gox. But that being said, it's certainly in the fore of everyone's mind, security. And from our perspective, number one, we're not suggesting it's silent Bitcoin. The version of Bitcoin that we're issuing in voucher form in Silent Vault should be a place for the storage of your Bitcoin. It's really a transactional-based system. So if you're about to make a donation to Ross Ulbricht's defense, Dread Pirate Roberts, you want to make a donation to WikiLeaks, you want to make a donation somewhere that you have some concerns that the state may have some blowback on you for your support of a particular cause, certainly Silent Bitcoin would be a great choice. However, you do own those Bitcoins. I mean, legally, you absolutely own them. But right now, you're trusting us. And I think it's naive when we get into this whole discussion of a completely trustless system. I think you always have to trust some parties. But in this situation, it's a very tight-knit group that is being trusted. And we are looking at the evolving emerging technologies to make it as trustless and as secure as possible. Possibly multi-signatory holes on those addresses that are holding the Bitcoins. Maybe, you know, a third party that's independent and arbiter, the actual owner of the coins, and us. You know, so three parties, and maybe two of the three signatures could release it back.
But okay, so let me at different levels of this, when I have and I go into your cold storage, is it your cold storage or mine? And then the level above that, when I want the service of being anonymous, the anonymity of doing, because that's what, and you remember, you know, my big concern of this whole thing in Bitcoin is when you go to the funding center on Freedom's Phoenix, it'll have an event there or a project that we have right there. It's, heck, I'll show the audience right now. I mean, you know, this is exactly what I'm talking about. I go to Freedom's Phoenix and I say, you know what I want? I want the ability to be able to send money to an individual or a project to where I have the anonymity that I can just go ahead and send the Bitcoin to someone without repercussions from the man. I don't want them to be able to say, oh, no, you're not allowed to do that because it challenges the state. And I'm going, no. Well, it's taking time here because we're doing the Skype. All right, here we go. I go to Funding Center, and I have a project. Let's say, look at Locking the Cage by Larkin Rose there, and boom, there you go. This QR code, I can go right now, and I go, blip, I want to send him, you know, 10 Bitcoin. And that, man, it just, you know, freedom reigns. Well, whenever you are funding a liberty project like the Lovolution, the Ron Paul Revolution thing and so on, you do that, and they go, man, if we could nip it in the bud, if we could have nipped it by stopping these guys or your money laundering or your whatever, and they're going, no, you are supporting the opposition and the descent of the empire, well, there's some ramifications. You get audited, you get visited, you get something. So I'm going, I can see the benefit of having some anonymity, you know, like Cody Wilson's going on about Dark Wallet that we've yet to see. So I'm going, okay, so Silent Vault, I meet Sean, I say, hey, man, you got a Silent Vault, well, hook us up, brother, you know, tell us everything that we need to know. But that feature is, to start off with, I need to be able to take my Bitcoin and put it into a cold storage, then that level right there, am I trusting you, or is that under my total control, and then only trust you in the transaction from that account on another level? You know, help me understand the process here.
Sure. You're trusting a few things. You're trusting, one, us with the cold storage and that security. As it stands right now, month two of beta, that's where we're at. We will hold the Bitcoins in cold storage. There will be some, based on day-to-day need, in a hot wallet. There, you're trusting, again, our security to keep that hot wallet that's attached to the internet secure. But like I said, we're going to look at how to bring, you know, a higher comfort level, certainly to users. But I want to address the whole issue of trust, because I think that's something that's really misunderstood in the Bitcoin space. But before I go to the trust issue, I'd like to loop back to Larkin Rose. I noticed the marketplace you have for crowdfunding on your site, and that's wonderful. Larkin, you know, this is a really good example that you brought it up.
Very good example.
You brought up a few really good examples. So I don't know much about unlocking the cage, but knowing Larkin, I assume it's going to be consistent with his personal philosophy. And he actually sort of ran a test conference or seminar called, I believe, Exploding the Myth or Dispelling the Myth, which presumably is along the similar lines, but this is much more involved project. And then that was held in the suburb of Detroit. I'm Canadian, as you know, and I went down as a road trip with my three children, my wife, and with another homeschooling family.
Wait. Oh, man, you got us on the edge of the seat right when you're getting to the goody. Okay, hold this. You know, there was Larkin Rose, good example, did a thing in Detroit, which is this Unlocking the Cage is an online interactive version of exactly what you went to. That's the point of this project. And your experience, and using this as an example, you know, see, you got to stick around for the next segment, and we're going to get into it.
Meowbit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. Meowbit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address and our free software, Meowbit. Go to meowbit.com. That's meowbit.com.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
I tell you, it was him, was one of the very, 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 very perfect freaking examples of what we were doing. You know, James Babb from Philadelphia helped us with the beta testing and getting everything all ready in the funding project for that page and everything for the launch of Larkin. And I was doing some recruiting and fundraising and money and so on for him while I was in Panama. Because these very people are just like, you know, just like Sean Daly. They're going, ooh, he said. And how can we support him? And how can we do it? But they need the anonymity, because if you got resources and you start throwing money to guys like Larkin Rose, there's a guy with, you know, mirror sunglasses, a black suit and a little curly thing in his ear that wants to come say hello. And I'm going, you know, why? Because it's support of dissent, of the revolution between the ears. Now, Sean was starting to tell us that, you know, he has personally experienced this effort by Larkin in Detroit. What this, you know, Unlocking the Cage effort is all about is taking that very effort, that very presentation that he had done there, and making an interactive thing so it can reach way more people around the country using the internet. That's what this project is, because Larkin cannot be everywhere all the time. So we wanted to come up with some kind of project that we could replicate this and it be in a long enough timeline to include
2016 election cycle. I go, Larkin, you come up with some, I need you to be there. And then another one, Authoritarian Sociopathy, we'll bring that online as we get Larkin going with Davi Barker from Bitcoin Not Bombs, and kind of the same, you know, vein of this, an experiment that we want to make sure and demonstrate and we learn something. So Sean's going to go ahead and tell us of his personal experience in how Silent Vault, you know, something like this can be used so that Larkin can get the support he needs, but everybody that supports him doesn't wind up on a you got audited list. I mean, that's the point. That's why I was interested in having him come to see if his service can help provide that anonymity. So let's start off, Sean, with you telling us about your experience with Larkin's seminar, you know, his presentation. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and just prior to going to the actual seminar itself, I kind of want to focus on the issue of how to support Larkin and why privacy and anonymity in giving that support might be important. And I'll just describe the facts here, and I'll let people draw their own inference. So we go to see Larkin at that inaugural seminar by road. So we've got two SUVs, two homeschooling families, a total of 7 children, 4 adults. And we all get pulled over at your border in Windsor, Detroit, and our vehicles are searched, luggage opened, stuff strewn around, not very politely put back in place. We're removed away from the vehicles. Our cell phones, I do believe, were taken from us. And we're, you know, segregated into rooms with the children and everything. And not really much happened. There really wasn't any extensive questioning. It was more search of the vehicles. And the explanation was this was completely random. And perhaps it was a really big coincidence that two vehicles traveling to the same seminar. But, you know, we did buy the Larkin's tickets and communicate about promoting that event in the open. You know, Larkin uses PGP in his email communications, but I was sort of promoting it among some Canadian friends. So there was lots of Gmail, Hotmail type communications.
You made the list.
Maybe. And what really made me suspicious was that when we were being released and there was some you know, perfunctory interaction with a border officer, they sent a chap who professed to be a Ron Paul supporter to process us, you know, which I thought was, and I asked the guy some questions. He seemed to be sincere. They did, in fact, vote for Ron Paul. The irony of the situation seemed to be lost on them. But anyways, let's get to the seminar. And it seemed to be quite effective. Larkin has that sort of moral clarity that works. And he just, in a very non-threatening, non-accusatory manner, he just walks people through a lot of their default beliefs and presumptions about the necessity of the state and explodes them. So, you know, I didn't see any unchanged minds coming out of that 2-day seminar. So I was really quite excited when I looked at your site and I saw that you're doing a crowdfunding effort for him. Now, out of curiosity, Ernie, how are you approaching that? I mean, you plug it in and you're inviting people that are contributing to the cause of freedom to sort of display their project there, or, you know, have you taken steps to be mindful of, I guess it's the Jobs Act in the U.S. that governs this area, or are you just
the
sort
one
of
act or some act I'm supposed to know anything about? I guarantee you there was no act I looked at.
Good stuff. And you
I don't even want to know what you're talking about.
Good. And no uncomfortable or nasty letters from alphabet agencies so far.
No. This is all right. I'll explain this, and you'll appreciate this probably more than most. What happened was, you'll see on the funding center up there, the other one that's featured up there with Larkin is the jury nullification promotion billboard thing that James Babb did. Now, he's out of Philadelphia, knows Larkin well, lives by him. He's the one that did We Won't Fly, you know, TSA protest years ago, and he does Fed stock in Philadelphia. He's like, you know, Freedom's Phoenix in Philadelphia. It's like Phoenix, it would be probably, you know, Ernest and what we do here, and James is, you know, Philadelphia, bloodily love, kick ass, we're good friends. He spoke at the Freedom Summit and so on. What happened was when he did this billboard campaign, he used GoFundMe as the mechanism for the crowdsource funding to fund the billboards they put in the metro, the subway, in Washington, D.C. Department of Justice freaked out, and they're like, oh, you're jury tampering. We don't like, you know, people being informed of their jury rights, and that's, like, bad, you know? Well, when he was within days, he raised the money, he put the signs up, they didn't like it. They go, he's going to do it again in L.A., Phoenix, New York. So he goes, you know, we're going to go ahead and do these fundings. GoFundMe canceled the project. They go, oh, no, heck no. Why would you? Because we can't. Well, you shouldn't. They go, we did anyway. Well, why would, who do we talk to? Nobody. Talk to the computer. They just canceled the project. Well, we had already started the funding center like last February, you know, over a year ago, starting working on this concept. And because I knew that what those that won't leave us alone feared more than anything else was dissent, was people funding and able to fund things like the Lovolution. I was heavily involved in that. Well, what happened was I go, you know, if they could have nipped this in the bud, they would have. And there wasn't this crowdsource fund. I remember they had, Chip-In. Chip-In was really popular, and then that went away. You know, and I'm going, yeah, they don't like this crowdsource funding thing. Well, when GoFundMe canceled, I go, James, get your butt over here on the funding center. We're going through beta testing right now. Get it up there. Let's get all the bugs out and everything, because we want to get that funded, and that's doing well. We're already doing contracts in LA and Phoenix for that. But I go, what we really want to do is I want to replicate and I want to expand Larkin Rose's influence on more than him having to travel around the country all the time. And I'm going, we need to get him funded to where, you know, one, just because he's already done enough, you know, but he's always got, he does Josie the Outlaw videos. He does a lot of things, but we can get him resources to replicate this event that you came from Canada with a bunch of kids and getting pulled over and promoting it at the border for doing it. You know, and I'm going, oh, gee, I wonder if the man won't like that one, but it needs to be where it's anonymous for exactly the reason of what you're talking about. Now, you can fund it by going through PayPal. You can do BitPay using your Bitcoin. You can do credit cards. We set it all up for that, but also we just put the QR code up there, and you can just directly fund them and send it to them, and I never even see it. But the NSA does. Because if you're doing, it's not anonymous. That's one thing I made. I go, look, if you're giving Larkin money, Bitcoin, you're sending doing this, it's not anonymous. How do we make it anonymous? When we come back, I'll finish that and what Silent Vault might be able to do.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Yeah, when we come back, I'll finish the story and why we're doing it the way we're doing it and how I link in and what I get out of it and blah, 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 blah. But this was a premeditated for years working on building up to this point. And that's why I was interested in the Silent Vault, and what you have is the anonymous features of this. You know, but I also need to feel comfortable with this trust thing that we're talking about. We haven't finished up on that yet and all sure. The different, you know, because this is... Because, yeah, I need trustless. And,
yeah,
you know,
let's go right after Larkin, right to the issue of trust. And I want to speak of it in larger terms first, and then specifically about
okay,
silence.
No, that's fine. I want to help, you know, anybody that can help. Because you can see the funding center, and Larkin is such a neon flashing example, and your experience gives you a flashing neon example of exactly what I'm talking about. A lot of people Absolutely. Don't see it, and you freaking felt it as you're sitting there, you know, getting your car massaged.
In a very visceral manner, yes.
You know, with your kids there. I mean, if they didn't get a dose of. And after that experience, they go to Detroit, Visit a couple of days with Larkin. Tell me that didn't change their freaking perspective.
Absolutely. They understood that, you know, that uncomfortable experience when you scratch beneath the surface was just guys in funny costumes.
Yeah, I know. You know, Larkin is, you know, I tell you what, we just, do me a favor, Donna, make a note. I will send him the Google file that we had on Larkin and Will Grigg at the Freedom Summit. We had a, we're back. We missed it coming in. I apologize. We were talking off air, and it's on air. Okay, sorry. I missed the rejoinder. Okay, now what we are doing, we had the Freedom Summit was mid-February, and we're in, you know, more and more keep coming on the whole pack. We had so many speeches, and now we have the some of the files are done, and the two that, you know, the first ones that were done with Anthony Gregory, and the other one was Larkin Rose and Will Grigg and the dinner presentation. And I'm going to go ahead and send that to Sean because he's a big Larkin fan, and you'll see that, you know, he's already gone through this presentation. Now, think about it. He's in Canada. Larkin's doing a thing in Detroit, not too far away. They have two vehicles. They got a bunch of kids, four adults, seven kids. Is that how many you said it was? Something like that?
And that's, yeah, a total of seven children.
Amazing. You know, from what ages?
My guys, okay, this was July 2012. My guys are currently 8, 10, and 12. Our friends, their children are older, ranging from 12 up to 21.
Okay, so you got 8 to 21, 7, you know, next generation of. They go to the border, and all of a sudden they're like, they explain it to you. Get in this room, we're going to go through all your stuff, and welcome to America. You know, I'm like, yay. And they go straight to Larkin 2 days there and come back. Man, if they didn't get a neon flashing example of what's up. Okay? So I'm going, all right. So let me go ahead and finish with this. I want to get more on Silent Vault and how that can apply to this. But this is what happened. When we did the funding center, I could have hard-coded in there like a crowdsource funding Kickstarter, FundMe, Indiegogo, something, of what percentage. I go, you know, 3%, 4%, 5%, and you got a percent. And you add up all these percents, I was just like 10%, you know, that somebody else is getting instead of, you know, from direct funding. So I made the decision, and, you know, in the vein of, you know, and consistent with the idea of voluntarism, I'm going, you know what, I'm going to count on you. What we're going to do is we're going to provide the service to where you do, we'll promote and set up the shopping cart and the funding center and the mechanism, your bank account and your PayPal and your BitPay and your whatever. We'll go, all right, here it is. You can go ahead and directly fund this project and I get nothing. The only thing that I do is when that transaction is done, we know that there was a transaction. And we send an email. When you hit send and it's done, the only thing that I get is a notification and the emails that were in there. And I go, all right, the person that sent the money, I go, hey, I see you hooked up with the guy that we also sent the money to the receiver. Larkin gets an email. The person that sent it gets an email. Says, I see you guys hooked up. Peace out. Glad that worked out for you. In exchange, as you know, it might be a nice thing, good karma, you know, for you to a little something, something for the home team for providing this service. Click here. You can send us some Bitcoin. Here's the PayPal, whatever, voluntary, however much you want to send. I don't care. All right. That's the only interface I have with the entire transaction. The reason for that is one, I think, you know, people are generous and they're going to support and whatever, and I don't care. The big reason is that I can't be like recode. They can't go into, oh, well, you have this dissident of whatever and you got a percentage of and a bank account and the seized of you weren't supposed to and we don't like and, you know, whatever, an anal probe. And I go, no, I didn't have any. It's all voluntary. They made a contribution. Why? Because they wanted to. Why? Because, I don't know, we provided a service that they didn't have to pay for. So, Sean, that's why I did it that way is because I know that these bad guys do not want liberty-oriented projects, especially like Larkin, what he's done and the impact he had on you and your family and your friends coming from Canada, you know, to experience this. The hell no. So I don't want to put myself in a position to make it easy for them to target some head of the snake that they want to get, some central command, some accumulation of credit card numbers, a delayed payment. Or nope, don't have nothing to do with it. Went straight to Larkin, deal with him. You see my point? So that's why we did it that way. What is missing? When I had that QR code up there that you could just directly go, because even BitPay wants your DNA sample, okay? So you go BitPay, oh, and who's this? And kind of fence in, whatever. Well, really? So I said, just put the QR code up there and directly fund it. But it's not anonymous. I need some kind of feature that is anonymous. That's why you're on talking about, you know, your silent vault. Now do you understand?
Absolutely. I get it. I get it perfectly. Silent Bitcoin is what we offer within Silent Vault. And you mentioned earlier eGold, and I assume you were a fan of eGold and maybe some of your audience.
Yeah, the concept. I knew what it meant, you know, yeah, which is I know why the bad guys were going to stop it, too.
Right. And did. And so within eGold, there was something called 1MDC. Does that ring a bell or did that miss your attention? 1MDC.
I don't remember. You know what I remember is that the guy that did my archives and everything, we were excited about and promoted. And I said, as much for doing my archives and all the coding and stuff that they did for it, you get to keep all the eGold that's raised. So he was the one that benefited from it. And I promoted it, but he got enough out of it that I got all my archives done. So that's all I knew about it.
Okay. So I'll tell you real briefly because, you know, any middle-aged listeners that were into eGold and saw 1MDC, they get the silent Bitcoin by analogy immediately. 1MDC was elegant in its simplicity. It was just a chap who was known within the libertarian community who simply had one account within eGold. And then he set up an accounting system on a server, just like eGold, which wasn't great, but an accounting system on top of his eGold account. And that was completely anonymous. So now when the FBI were invited by Dr. Jackson in his, you know, misguided efforts to work with the state, and we see where, you know, that got him an ankle bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
So
go ahead and explain who that was. Now, you're talking about the Mt. Gox guy, right?
No. I'm talking about the founder of eGold now. Dr. Doug Jackson is a former military oncologist who was the founder and basically bootstrapped the eGold infrastructure.
I remember, anybody want to know about eGold, you look for eGold Wired Magazine, and it was like 2002 or something. They did a big thing on it. And I remember they were in London or something. They moved to Dubai to try and get out of under the, and it didn't matter. They came after him anyway. So, and he was trying to make nice with the government because why?
Yeah, and just sort of to be clear, Jackson never actually left American soil. I mean, he left American soil from time to time and all, but he kept his servers in Melbourne, Florida. What he did in the Middle East was, and I think this was pretty much public knowledge, he did a skin called eDinar, so essentially a web face front that he licensed out to some Middle Eastern interests. And that kind of died. But he, you know, I think this was really the critical fault of the eGold system was he chose in a very principled manner. The man's very intelligent and he had a lawyer as a partner that was also bright. But they chose from a principled position to run eGold from U.S. soil. And then he basically there was issues in there similar to within Bitcoin, the attention on Silk Road. There was not specifically that activity, but activity that the state had issues with. And then he became very open with the FBI. It was like, come in, and he testified in front of Congress and said, I actually can trace, you know, every gram of gold that's ever entered and exited the system and where it's, you know, what accounts it's gone to and on, much better than a bank could or the Federal Reserve System could trace monies. So, you know, that was his approach. And just like Charlie Schrem in New York, the initial founder of the Bitcoin Foundation and its vice president at the time of his arrest, he too was working with New York state legislators to draft rules and regulations. And he's now facing criminal prosecution. But anyways, 1MDC was saved, you know, when the FBI started poking around people's privacy because you had an outside entity that was running all the activity within one account. And he wasn't quite as transparent as Dr. Jackson was. So Silent Bitcoin is kind of like that 1MDC within eGold.
Okay, now I want to interrupt you real quick. We're going to go into after hours here and make sure we get in the archive. This is the end of the live broadcasted show number, but we're not going to be done. We're going to make sure we get it all in. We're all, most of the traffic is in the archive anyway. So, we'll get this all taken care of. I want to make sure that we get this full story. And Silent Vault, check it out. SilentVault.com. SilentVault.com. Because I want to make sure that people understand that Sean understands. I mean, from a visceral, personal experience, went to see years ago, go see some Larkin with some kids and a bunch of people from Canada, we have perfect understanding of why, neon flashing example of why Ernie wants anonymous donating, because I understand the need and desire for it. We're going to see if Silent Vault can help with that. Certainly, a guy that's run it, Sean Talley, understands why. No, let the
Since time
video go.
Began, tyrants have...
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, let the video go. All right. Now, go ahead and finish, the MDC. I mean, what was it you were calling? Let's go ahead and pick up where you left off.
Right. So, one MDC was simply, technically, it was one account within the Eagle system that was owned by one individual. That individual then built an extension, an accounting system. So, one MDC was like a fractal reflection of E-Gold itself. So you would sign up for E-Gold, you'd have an account, then you'd go sign up with one MDC, and you would transfer your gold from the E-Gold account that you owned into MDC's E-Gold account, but then you switched your activity and your accounting to the one MDC system. So anyone like Dr. Jackson, when he brought the FBI in, when they were looking at those accounts, all they would see was a transfer into one MDC, and then there was a cold trail in terms of, breaching people's financial privacy.
Oh, so hell no, they didn't like that. They weren't going to allow that. I mean, that's exactly what they were afraid of was going to happen.
Exactly. I mean, that's really the concern. So one MDC, got taken down when E-Gold got taken down.
Hell, that's why E-Gold got taken down.
What's that? You had some funds inside there?
No. Well, no, I'm sure we did. I didn't, but the computer scientist that was doing my archive and so on, I'm sure. Matter of fact, if you go to, I'll show you this. This would be of interest. Go to freedomsphoenix.com, and you'll see where it has, and we can check this account. I would be interested. Let's follow this, because this is a good little history lesson here. You go to freedomsphoenix.com. On the left-hand side, you'll scroll down to where it says Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. Okay, when you see that icon, it's a logo there. Are you at freedomsphoenix.com?
I should go. I'm on the crowdfunding part of the site.
No. Well, go to the top left and click on the bird. Take you to the front page.
Okay. I don't know why it's hanging on me right now. Okay, we're there.
Okay, on the left-hand side, you scroll down, you'll see it says, declare your independence, show right below Ron Paul, Charles Goyette, Ben Swan.
Right.
Okay, now click on that, declare your independence, and that'll take you to the show pages. Now, what we did is we had the old archive that when I was doing Terran Radio here and so on, you go down and see it says in red, right below all the DCAST crap, and it'll say, listen to Ernest Hancock's Phoenix Podcast Show Archives 2003-2008.
Got it. Yeah.
Okay, now click on that, and that goes to the old archive pages. Now, when you get there and you scroll down, and you'll see it says, please donate. Go to the bottom of the page, and it'll say, please donate, better than yours, whatever.
Right.
Okay, let's click on that. Now, you see where it says E-Gold there?
Yes, right.
Okay. Now, that, right. This was started back in 2003. Okay, so this is like 12 years ago. So I go in, all right, secure online, try to click on eGold.com. Let's see what comes up there. And it still has something. See, I don't know what, I remember checking this not too long ago, and there's something there. I don't know if that's just an old site or it's still.
No, I'll tell you exactly what that is. Basically, I personally was getting four correspondence from, US Justice Department, about accounts in there. They really only started the first disbursements, Ernie, if you can believe this. The seizure of $89 million worth of gold occurred in 2006. The first disbursements, of course, they liquidated the gold to fiat. So people didn't get that beautiful
gold.
doubling of gold value over that time, of course. But so the fiat disbursement of your gold value in 2006 started just in November 2013. So there's a notice up there from December 27, 2013, what they call the value access plan. And so you probably should have gotten a letter. I don't know, you know, if you registered your account pseudonymously or
something. No, it wasn't me. It was my computer IT guy. This is how it went. I was doing a show on this, and I say, man, this is cool. And he goes, you know, we should do this as a kind of a promotion for it, just like we would promote, you know, the concept of Bitcoin. Like, we promote the concept of Safecoin. We promote Namecoin. We promote MadeSafe. We promote Silver, you know, Silent Vault. I mean, it's the philosophy that we were promoting. And what happened, I said, if you want to promote this, I tell you what, you put it up there, and as payment, you know, we can promote it, and if people donate to this, you can keep it, you know, for doing my archive. So he's like, cool, done. And he's an attorney here and a big brain box computer science uber libertarian good friend of mine. So I go, fine, put it up there. That's your payment for doing all this work. Well, he was big excited about Eagle, and then all of a sudden, boom, it gets seized. So I should send this to him and say, hey, man, they're doling it back out. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, yeah. The monies are starting to flow. So whatever he had in, and the thing is, whoever clicked on this link, they had a Progeny affiliate program. So whoever clicked on your link and then decided to open an eGold account, you would receive a certain portion of the fees over the years into that account, you know, an affiliate fee type thing. So yes, that he should check that out. Is that lawyer friend, or I don't know if you're at liberty to say, is that Victor...
No, it's Michael Kilsky. He is he was like state chair of the Libertarian Party for years. He's an attorney. He's one of those, you know, billion IQ guys that says, you know, I'll go get my law degree because I can. I mean, you know, one of those guys. And he's a big master IT, and he does all my security for Freedom's Phoenix. So he's a security guy and that has the servers. Then I have a webmaster that does a lot of development and so on. So he's still, you know, a good friend and involved. So I should let him know that, you know, they're starting to dole out and do that. Donna, you know, I'll just do it now while you're talking. But I'm going to send him an email saying, hey, man, you know, Sean's saying you got money coming.
Yeah, I got you.
I'm sorry?
Right. You washed out there just on the Skype connection for a second, but I got the gist of what you were saying, yes.
Okay, so then this gentleman go ahead creates this, you know, like a silent vault, you know, on eGold, and man, if that didn't send the man in the, you know, freaking hell, no.
Right, right. I mean, that probably certainly turned up the heat for eGold. But the analogy for silent Bitcoin, which is our version of Bitcoin within Silent Vault, is the exact same thing. Because if you use Bitcoin's blockchain as being analogous to the eGold servers, well, then silent Bitcoin, the voucher that we give in exchange for the Bitcoin that you paid us just before you donate to Larkin's crowdfunding, for example, that doesn't appear anywhere in the blockchain. All that is seen is the deposit into our address on the blockchain, but your donation to Larkin is completely anonymous. And we have no records. So even if we're served with a court order, we're not actually in possession of that information to corroborate, you know, what might be a suspicion by the state. And I think that's pretty important thing. So, you know, do you need to trust us for that transactional period in between? Well, then, yeah, there is some issue of trust, which might be a great time, Ernie, if you have the time, for us to segue into a discussion of...
No, we got the time. We want to get full understanding. We're after no commercial breaks now. Now we can freaking get it understood. Because that's one reason why I wanted to have you on. It was that very issue, is this trust thing. Because I definitely, you can understand why I gravitate towards, I need a trustless, I ain't got to worry about it.
Right.
Because, I mean, we already went through this with eGold and what you're talking about. Already went through it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And with Eagle, I mean, just to sort of go a little deeper with that, again, that is a situation where everyone that was informed understood the monumental risks that were being taken by Eagle being domiciled in the United States. I mean, shortly after Eagle came on the scene, there was a competitor called Pecunix, which was out of Panama, where you just returned from last night, I gather. And Pecunix has, you know, it's never been hacked, unlike Eagle. There's never been any allegations of impropriety in terms of accounting. So it's there because it was sort of outside of the reach of your government. So, you know, Eagle really made some very bizarre choices, but it was the icebreaker. It introduced so many people to digital gold currency. But again, just like Mt. Gox, it was just a matter of being informed. So I met Dr. Jackson because I was looking for a solution for online gambling clients that were being squeezed. These are Canadians with servers mostly in Costa Rica, but some in Panama and Antigua, but were running, you know, your government was running interference, even though there was no law in late 90s or early 2000s against this, but they were pressuring Visa, MasterCard, Western Union, then PayPal. So all of these money transmitters just started falling by the wayside, not because of legal obligation, but because of coercion, intimidation and coercion by the U.S. government. So Eagle was really like an academic project. At the time that I learned of it, Dr. Jackson came up here, which I was very grateful for, and we met in my home when he was, you know, still basically finishing off the code. And remarkably, he wrote a lot of the code on Eagle. And we discussed all these issues, and I mean, he understood the risk, but at the end of the day, he chose still to go ahead. So in 2001, you know, 2 years after my adoption of it, and he had 3,000 accounts when I started to introduce clients to the concept. Within 5 weeks, he went from having basically 300 ounces of gold, if I recall correctly, and 3,000 accounts to over 30,000 accounts and about $2 million in gold. And then it didn't stop. It just went from there. So there was this incredible hunger within the free market environment for something like Eagle, and you know, he embraced it. But I left in 2001, and most of the clients I introduced to the concept left then as well because of, you know, unease with or dis-ease with the system. Of course, it was 5 years later before the U.S. government actually seized the gold and shut them down. It was a bit of a delayed reaction, but the signs were there all along.
Well, see, you can understand from my perspective of anything like what you're doing and such. I'm really looking for, I'll give you an example. I go to Panama and I'm talking to guys and they're like, Ernie, you know, what are you looking to do? Moving here, doing this, doing that. You know, what's the, you know, we need to, you got this new development going on and it'd be great to get more libertarians down here and, you know, and whatever. And I'm going, you know, well, I'm, you know, we got to get involved in politics. I don't want to get involved in politics. I don't want to, you know, do it. If I go anywhere, it's just leave me alone as I'm looking for the space station day log, you know, bite me. You know, I just, you know, the seasteading bottom of the ocean island of, you know, I don't care. And if I find a place where I can, you know, be a safe place for my family and my grandkids, and all I got to do is smoke weed and watch waves lap over my toes with the sand and everything, I'm good, you know, and I got my aquaponics up on the beach, you know, I just want to be left alone. Well, their idea was, well, you know, we still have to what? And I go, I don't want to have to fight. And I had a guy, it was Jonathan Mohan, one of the guys that presented talking about self-owning cars at the Bitcoin conference. You remember that? You know,
I do.
You know,
yeah.
Jonathan was on. And he said, "Well, you gotta fight for something." I go, "No, I don't. I mean, if I gotta fight for deregulation of Bitcoin, or I gotta fight for something, or I gotta defend against or whatever, I got, what am I up against? The unlimited resources of they, them, those that definitely do not want me to be left alone." And I'm going, if the system is such that I gotta worry about it or fight it or deal with it, I just ew. I'm all of a sudden now I'm back to stacking silver in some desert. I buried it, and you know it's in the bottom of some lake somewhere. You know, so I'm looking for something I don't have to manage. I don't have to babysit. I don't have to. And that's what I'm looking for. So I go to Pam and I go, well, Ernie, what are you looking for? That I don't have to do anything. Well, you got it. No, I ain't got a nothing. Okay. So that's what I'm looking for, is I don't have to anything. That's why I'm so interested in this MadeSafe thing. Well, you remember us yakking about MadeSafe. They did their launch. They raised all the money in like 2 days. Done. It's over. Next. And I go, yeah. Well, that worked out.
So yeah, that's absolutely amazing, MadeSafe. That's it kind of came out of nowhere, and it looks like an amazing project. And the founders, is it David Irving?
Right.
Is it that you're going to have on soon? I think he, you know, his mind and heart and soul are all in the right place.
Well, I need it. That's where, you know, I don't want to diss on you or anything, but Silent Vault has to have these traits, and you of all people. Now, I mean, just from your experience with the Larkin effort, I mean, you see, you know, the Unlocking the Cage project is exactly why I needed the anonymous donating for things like that. Exactly. Neon flash and light example of what we're talking about. And you have a personal experience of why that's important to me.
Yeah. And I want to talk about the trust, because there's this, from my perspective, and I think this is fairly sound interpretation of Bitcoin, but I think there's a misapprehension of how trustless the Bitcoin system is. The reality is it a decentralized system? Well, yeah, insofar as everyone's holding on to their own keys, if they choose to. Other people have people host their wallets and hold their keys. But the core of Bitcoin, the heartbeat, is the blockchain. And the blockchain is being sustained as a centralized phenomena. I mean, it is huge and it's centralized. The miners who support that system, you'll hear the term 51% consensus. Is that a term that you're...
Oh, no. And I'm glad you're going down this road. I got another half hour with you right now on this very issue. You just keep talking. I got a bunch of questions. Go.
Okay, excellent. So, you know, that concerns me, quite frankly. I mean, I think it's a very innovative technical breakthrough, what was done here with Bitcoin. But there cannot just be this sort of blind embrace of it as an open source decentralized project that is completely censorship proof. It's not. Number one, it's not anonymous, it's pseudonymous, right? So we can trace spends on the blockchain. The other factor is, what does 51% consensus really mean? Well, to me, that kind of sounds like democracy, right? And democracy has really coughed up some really ugly ducklings over the years. Hitler arose, you know, out of a state that had a constitution that sounded a lot like America's constitution in many regards, and Canada's, and he was democratically elected. You know, there's lots of examples out there of what democracy can serve up to us. So, you know, let's look at what's going on. In New York State, you've got some very vocal politicians pushing the concept of a bit license. Well, I'll give you a hypothetical. What happens if they say that, look, we're not going to recognize any Bitcoin transactions unless they have this license? And the license, of course, means what? It means you go through Know Your Customer, KYC, and anti-money laundering compliance, AML compliance, and they now identify you. And now we're back to square one, where your identity and your money is married in the eyes of the state. And they're going to turn to miners, people like possibly the Bitcoin Foundation or people on the core development team. But the noise, the people turning to these people, are going to be the big VCs. Circle, who did the keynote address in New York, they've raised $29 million. That's mainstream institutional money. I don't know exactly who the investors are, but it's Wall Street or Silicon Valley, Sand Road, Silicon Valley type money. And those guys want to be very, very cautious and very, very compliant. So if miners think that Bitcoin's going to tank because there's going to be some sort of legal action against transactions that don't have the bit license, now we're going to be in a situation, perhaps, where they reject or fork from users who don't have this bit license. You know, that's just one example. So is it truly an objective reality? I mean, there's a lot of people being persuaded now from the libertarian community, like Stefan Molyneux, Jeffrey Tucker, who are, I think, what you would properly term objectivists. And they speak a lot of objective reality. You know, things like a gold ounce in your pocket is pretty objective in the sense that no one can really screw around with that. But they don't seem to be worried about this 51% consensus. And it's got me incredibly worried.
Okay, now this, I tell you a little behind the scenes what's going on, how this came up. Jonathan Mohan came on, and we were yakking about this and so on, and we took him to James Babb and I took him to lunch, and because he gave great presentation, and I wanted to share with him, you know, my concern. It took a while for me to inject and get what I wanted, you know, what we had been talking about today, and I go, therefore, I am concerned about, you know, fill in the blank. Well, this is what he said. He goes, well, there was an effort at one time that there were going to be two entities, miners and nodes and whatever, voting blocks or something, that were going to combine that would have had 50 plus 1% in changing the source code or something. And they didn't do it because they knew the perception that people would have had they done this would have been, what the hell is this? So they go, oh, we don't want to do that. It'll look bad. And I'm going, you know, I don't give a crap, you know, how it looks bad, the fact that they could even freaking do it, you know, whether they do it or not, the fact that they can. So this has been my whole mantra all this time. I'm going, look, I just need to know, can they, in some circumstance, create an environment to where they can change the source code? That's what I just need to know. Can they? Yes. Well, then they are, or they will. I mean, if they can, they will. Because there's not a limit to resources. There's not a hurdle of some morality or something they got to get. Oh, we wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong. I mean, you know, so I'm going, can they? Well, they can talk about how difficult it is and how they wouldn't, and you got to have and didn't have blah. And it almost, I mean, a good friend of mine in Panama, we had this exact same discussion. And it got to the point to where, I mean, it was hostility. I mean, he was upset that I'm going, look. And the point that I was making is I'm going, if they can, then they are. And you go, nope, there's no code in there. Show me where it's in. It's not there. It doesn't say it. They're not doing it. And you're just, you know, making up stuff. And I'm going, look, the point that I was making, can they? I mean, is there a mechanism by which they would be able to change the code to where it'd be more compliant with the government interaction of, like, they were the reason they shut down Eagle? They don't want the exact same thing to happen with Bitcoin. In fact, the biggest promoters of Bitcoin at the New York Bitcoin Conference was the government. It was the foundation. It was all Wall Street. It was all these, you know, the lawyers that are up there, the aides to Schumer, the congressmen, the, you know, the representatives and lobbyists, you know, to the Canadian government and banks. No, I'm going, whoa. They're the cheerleaders for Bitcoin. Why? Because I was of the opinion, I'm going, they already got their fingers in on something. Something doesn't smell right. I am like, you know, I smell a rat. So I want to know, where is the rat? And I'm going, can they change the source code? I was given the impression, two things that I was dispelled of, and one was that Bitcoin was anonymous. It's not. Okay. And even though it says, well, it's not anonymous, kind of sort of almost anonymous, it's really difficult anonymous. It's not anonymous. Okay. So that's one thing. So I'm going, all right, next. That's why we had Cody Wilson come and talk about dark wallet and stuff. Then I'm going, okay. The second thing is that once it was launched, it can never be changed. It's this great, wonderful thing that it's outside the purview of any kind of central authority. It's distributed. It's not controlled, and forever and always, you know, freedom reigns Bitcoin. And I'm going, okay, that's cool. Then Jonathan tells me about this combined effort of because of perception, they didn't combine their vote and node and 50 plus 1%. So I'm going, so this is when I'm glad you brought this up. So I got to ask this question. The source code being able to change Bitcoin, I didn't know that that was a continuing, ongoing kind of basis thing. How is that done? Who does it? By vote of whom? In what little secret handshake meeting is that even done? And they say, well, it's the miners and nodes. And I go, all right, where is this process done? What do you know about that? Help explain that to me.
Yeah. So my understanding is that you've got a core Bitcoin development team. The sort of public perception of the head of that group would be Gavin Anderson, who's also a member of the Bitcoin Foundation. And so he's a chap, you know, to be very specific as to, you know, his political stance. He's gone in and briefed the CIA in a open, transparent, helpful manner from his perspective, and is quite proud to do so, seemingly. So, you know, that.
Well, I remember Peter Schiff mentioning that. He's going, look, he's meeting with the CIA. How does that tell you? You know? So I'm going, yeah, you know, so it did raise some questions. So his position, where did he come from? What gave him that position? And this foundation, who? I don't know where these people came from. How did they consolidate some control over the, who are they?
Right. Well, this is it. I mean, there's two realities at play, okay? So you've got one reality, which is, you know, you've got the origins of Bitcoin, which was a white paper and some code that was put up there. Gavin, where did he come from? Well, you know, luck of history has it that in some sort of cryptography form online, he was in communication with the inventor of Bitcoin, Satoshi Nakamoto, which is, we all know now, is a synonymous name, despite what Newsweek says. So the last communication was with Gavin. And so he sort of had, you know, sort of the torch handed on from this mysterious character, Satoshi.
He says. Okay?
He says. And, you know, let's just go down a quick little tangent here. I just want to, you know, drop one bomb on you. Okay. You can follow up on this yourself. But like, not everyone accepts this narrative that there's this, you know, brilliant cryptographer going by the name Satoshi that created all this and threw it out there. And I'll give you one example of a fellow American that you can follow up and decide for yourself how credible he is. Paul Graham is the founder of something called Y Combinator, which is like an accelerator for startups. And he's a very successful chap in the technical space.
Okay, now Y what? Is it W-H-Y or Y? Or
letter Y and then Combinator, which is a math term that I'm not really familiar what it means, but that's the origins of it.
So it's kind of a, you know, an angel, you know, venture capital thing.
Right, exactly. And it's a very intense thing. It's an accelerator. He brings in two sets of startups running for 6 months bi-coastal. So he runs 6 months in Boston during the summer months, spring and summer, and then autumn and winter, he's in Silicon Valley. So, you know, he'll take three young chaps in, founders, put up $20,000. They rent an apartment and they just, you know, hack and code for all that time. And then he puts them through various steps to make them investor ready, you know, for finally a pitch day at the end. But the important thing is, what's his view on Bitcoin? And he says, look, I've been around this space a long time, and I've been around a lot of open source projects. And this is dated, okay? I read this maybe 2 years ago, but I haven't seen anything contradicting this since. But he said, I know developers, and when they're working on something exciting like Bitcoin stuff,
they're yakking like you wouldn't freaking believe.
Big time. They're out on Friday night having a beer with their buddy, and they're sharing the excitement of what they're doing. That's just natural. He said the only projects that have this dome of silence about them are
government. Government.
Things like government, because, you know, there's real consequences for them.
And would you call them Sealanders or what?
I'm sorry?
No, you said, I overrode you, I commented, and you said a word. You know, the only people that do projects like this are...
Open source development folks, and the only people that are completely silent are state actors.
State actors.
Maybe that's what you didn't hear.
Okay, yeah. State
governments.
Actors. Government, right.
You're right.
Okay.
State actors. Yeah. Yeah. So now he's not suggesting it's the American government, or he's not suggesting it's, you know, the Cuban government.
No, I remember the Bloomberg guy that was hosting one of the panels. He goes, hey, man, it could have been the freaking Chinese army, Russia, CIA, who freaking knows? And I'm going, yeah. See, I from an old activist, I'm 53. Okay, a little gray in the beard. Okay, I look at it and I go, You know, I remember that the big goal has been to have a cashless society, that they want to be able to have all human interaction be convenient, be fast, be easy, be cashless, be we see it, okay? So you do not get to do the Larkin Rose funding thing. That was the whole point. They don't give a shit about, you know, drugs and hookers. You know, they're, you know, the hell, the CIA makes the money off the drugs. You know, they don't give a crap about that. What they care about is dissent. You know, this has been my activist mindset on this because I don't think I know, man. I freaking know. And if you had happened with you at the border, then you know too. Okay. So I'm going, okay. So I'm going, all right. This is what they need, a digital currency that has all these assets to get into the 21st century global. This is like a turn the flipping key, flip the switch, push the button, and they get the, you know, the dream they always wanted. We get to see the flow of everything worldwide. Thank you very much. It's the dystopian future of. And I'm going, okay, how did they do that? Well, it has to be seen as this freedom thing. It has to be the people's money. It has to be anti-state. It's got to be, you know, we are free and we're, you know, whatever. They get that aura, and I'm going, that's why at the New York Bitcoin Conference, I could see the crack. I'm going, well, if they want what they want, why don't they just call it, you know, government approved coin dot crypto, whatever the hell. So create your own and get what you want. I don't understand what the problem is. No, they want to have Bitcoin because it has street cred. They want to have Bitcoin because it has early adoption. They want to have Bitcoin because it got us all sucked in already. You know, that's my opinion. When SafeCoin comes out and MadeSafe.net, I'm going, and you know, for all we know, they could be freaking God knows what. You know, I mean, I'm assuming they're good guys. I like them. I'm rooting for them. But I'm rooting for the concept more than anything else. And I'm going, if they are a true threat to this, they're going to be targeted just like Eagold was. And I, one way or another, hell no. Now, David has assured me that this is, it's already done. It goes out and it's done. But they still have their source team too, you know, and they're hoping to get the it set and done to where they're no longer relevant and it's on its own and peace out. So I'm going, all right. So you have like state actors. They're not out there, you know, doing the forums and saying how great they are and, you know, and Big Bang Theory kids sitting there bragging over the code they just did that day. They're quiet. And that was kind of, I'm like, yeah. So they use this guy, Gavin, as one of the, you know, they squeeze his bicep and say, ooh, you're so smart and strong. And then I saw it at DEF CONs when they were doing the hackathon kind of crap they do in Las Vegas 20, 25 years ago. Who the hell's there? Freaking NSA and the CIA and the FBI, and that's where they're hiring all these guys. And I saw it happen at New York. They're there schmoozing up on Jonathan. Oh, come over here, and we're going to, you know, help you build your little platform on and do it out of Switzerland. We love you long time. Okay? So I can see the I'm sitting there watching it happen, and they don't see it. Or they don't care, or they're part of, or it doesn't matter. But I'm going, so from your perspective, they're looking at, go ahead and continue that thought that you have where the guy says the only people that do this kind of thing are state actors, and continue your comments from there.
Yeah. So Paul Graham, which is G-R-A, H-A-M, I do believe, of Y Combinator, he made that observation. He said, look, the only things that sort of come out in from complete silence and secrecy that I've encountered have been state projects. So he said, Bitcoin to me shows all the indicia of being a government fostered project. And, you know, he believes a lot of dangling threads as to what government for what purpose. But when you consider the fact that the blockchain is completely transparent, you know, it could be very easy to trace people, especially if they get their way with this bit license, which is what New York state legislators are suggesting. But on the other hand, it could be a government that's not friendly to the Federal Reserve system and wants to, you know, are of the view that, hey, we're never going to be the reserve currency for the world, so we might as well bring on a frontal assault on the U.S. dollar. Perhaps that's the motivation. I don't know. But clearly, the narrative is being pulled by various people, some that totally know what they're doing. They understand that this is something that is, you know, the free market, grassroots, open source community has bootstrapped this from nothing. They played, you know, this was played with for 8 months, Bitcoin, people with wallets, you know, exchanging value back and forth for nothing. And then about the 8-month mark, value emerged from within cyberspace and people started paying pennies, a nickel, a dime for a Bitcoin. The first famous purchase was a Domino's pizza, some ridiculous number of
20,000 Bitcoin or something. See, we were covering it since then. I've been covering this the whole time. The fact that a Bitcoin was worth anything, I'm going, here we go. And I've seen it because the eagle was, but I understood. I'm going, the man's not going to let this go, you know, not without them getting their finger in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so there's those people who know exactly what they're doing. And then there are people who, and they tend to be younger, who are sort of naive as to the limited number of choices that we have. Okay, so Jonathan, that you've made reference to, exceptionally bright guy, very well presenter. That was really enjoyable. I think you heard him describing the self-driving Google car running as an anonymous decentralized organization.
Buy more cars.
it was this sort of near future sci-fi type of story. That's great. Now, what is his sort of day position in the Bitcoin ecosystem? I gather he's the community outreach for something called Ethereum. Are you familiar with Ethereum?
Yeah, that's his company that he's going to base in Switzerland. He's working with regulators there, and he goes, well, Switzerland are all privacy. And I go, yeah, right up until they're not. I mean, they just turned over everything to IRS. I'm going to feel all warm and fuzzy about it being Switzerland. Where you been?
That's right. They're a socialist state that have, no qualms about seizing people's assets and coughing up people's financial privacy when they're squeezed. Now Jonathan actually, I think, is a community outreach. I mean, the founder, sort of ground zero for Ethereum would be Toronto up here. And it's a young chap, just turned 20, Vitalik Buterin. And he's really the mind trust, the brains initially behind Ethereum, but he certainly has attracted a global and talented team. But that's an example. When I first heard of and read of Ethereum, I couldn't contain my excitement. And, I got a list together of
why? What's its service that got you so excited?
Well, it essentially, I thought this might be the answer to my worries about Bitcoin. So essentially is all the benefits of Bitcoin in the sense that you've got blockchain technology, the ability to have a decentralized, sustainable system that is censorship proof from the state. That's how I see it. And it's much more scalable and elegant as software than Bitcoin is. So right now, Bitcoin out of nowhere is worth $6 billion, right? That's the market cap. You simply take the number of units that have been mined, times it by the current value at $450, and that gives you the market cap. So it's somewhere north of $6 billion. So the core development team, in terms of making changes to that code, they are rightly so conservative, right? So Ethereum is kind of taking a blank slate, creating a code base that allows you to come in with applications and run it on top of Ethereum. So it'll allow it to scale without too much pressure on the blockchain. And that's a non-technical lawyer's description of it. I'm doing a horrible job giving you the essence.
So it's like an Android operating system that has a mechanism by which people can do apps to integrate with it.
Right. But the important thing for me was it was something censorship proof, that if Bitcoin does get pulled away from us by state actors, then, Ethereum could really bootstrap up something similar very quickly for the libertarian free market unregulated environment and allow the innovation, that trajectory of innovation that Bitcoin started 5 years ago, allow it to continue in a unabated, uninterfered, unimpeded manner.
You know, that's one thing that a lot of the guys that are interested in, because they get a lot of their information from Freedom's Phoenix. I mean, if you're familiar with Freedom's Phoenix, you go look at the site.
Absolutely.
You can see that it's a wide radar screen of a lot of stuff, a lot of technology, a lot of, future, a lot of we're going to self-sustain and leave us alone-ism. And they go in and they look at it and they'll say, Ernie, didn't you know? I mean, you could do multi-signature. You could do contracts. You could do registration of your freaking toaster or your bicycle or your land. Or I go, I know. I mean, a year and a half ago, Don and I got, my wife and I got some land, and we, you know, did the trust to another trust and then put the paperwork in my safe, and I didn't file it with the county recorder. I don't want to fight the property tax thing. It's not that much. We pay the property tax. But my point is, I'm going, look, I'm not counting on the county recorder or the government to recognize my property right in this. Essentially, you know, in the future, there's going to be a bit plot parcel dot whatever the hell, and I'm going to say, boom, I register it with that. Well, who recognizes that? Nah, we do. No, I don't know. Whatever. It'll get to the point to where that will be the future. And I just want to be ready for that just to go, nada, 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 neon, I told you so. But the thing is that I have this investment in the humanity as our ability to give sanction or credibility or, authority to anything ourselves. We do it. And it's by what? By an open ledger of this is recognized by everything as a secure, accurate depiction of whatever the heck you want to put on it. That being said, they're trying to get Ernie, but the blockchain, look at all this great stuff that go on. And I'm right here looking at, you know, we had a presentation of BitGo. I mean, they're talking about insurance. They're talking about, you know, what do we got here? You know, all kinds of different stuff that they were doing that you can use this for. And I'm going, you know, stock market. I get it. I get it. I understand the concept. That's why I was so supportive. And I never said Bitcoin. I go, things like Bitcoin, cryptography like Bitcoin, you know, cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin. You know, this whole idea of a decentralized thing like Bitcoin, but not necessarily Bitcoin, because I need to have answer to this one question. This foundation, you know, just a representation or a consolidation of the people that have the ability to change the source code. How is the source code changed? Who does that? Under what condition? What criteria? Who authorizes it? How does it get replicated out through the system and the nodes and it's adopted? How does that happen? Help me out.
Yeah. So there's a procedure that is sort of best practices, as I understand it, for the open source community. So there's a core development team, very few of who are being paid, but chaps like Gavin, the CIA enabler, he's funded by the Bitcoin Foundation. He's paid. But most of the volunteers, I would say 90%, are not receiving any pay. They're just doing it on a volunteer basis. But you or I actually could go and join this development team. No one may listen to us for lack of technical knowledge or something, but you can propose something. I think it's called BIPs, Bitcoin Implementation Project. So I'm not sure what it stands for, but you would make a proposal and say, hey, I see a potential future use or utility of Bitcoin blockchain, blah, 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 whatever. And here's how I think you can change the code in a very minimal way to enable or facilitate this future utility of Bitcoin. And then either it gathers traction or it doesn't. So it's a very important group, and politically what's going on there is very important. And this is sort of, so they can implement or not implement. Now, when they do implement, this is really interesting. The miners then have to decide, are we going to honor that implementation and continue to verify and authenticate new blocks, right? New transactionals. Transactions on a ledger that we're adding every 10 minutes to that block or not. And if they choose not, then in theory, the idea is that these miners would, I guess, fork from the blockchain and continue on in a different direction. But, you know, that's really what the issue is. If the narrative is taken over by status, that there are no options, that the only reasonable and prudent and sensible course of action here is to work with the state, then people just sort of get sucked into that way of thinking. And you get, you know, new open source projects that could be our safety net for Bitcoin that are running to other jurisdictions, other governments, because they perceive them, you know, in law or political science, it's called regulatory capture. and it's where you're one of the early movers in the industry, and your strategy is, I want to influence what the rules that I got to comply with are. And so you start the political process.
No, I understand all this, but I'm still looking at the mechanism by which the miners, you know, they say, well, we get a majority of miners. Okay, well, so who are the miners? And I get, every time I go to these conferences, you got 15 gazillion guys selling all their miner stuff, and they go, and you know, like a cloud hashing thing, all of a sudden when they just say, yeah, the whole internet is the miner, and now we control everything. We're 50+1% of them. We said yes, and now it's done. I mean, I feel it's an ominous cloud, man.
Well, I'll tell you what we can understand or see demonstratively from these miners, and that's when we look at things historically, right? The idea is that it's all decentralized, but it's not so decentralized because they're a very cohesive group. There was a bug that was undetected in Bitcoin for a long, long time. I don't know if you were
on the
protocol, on the code. There was a problem in there was a fork in the blockchain in the sense that miners were updating two separate versions, and this is not a good thing. Okay, so it was almost like a 50-50 split, which one's right, which one's wrong. And that opens up the specter of what's called double spends.
Right.
Right? I could have, you know, one Bitcoin, but I spend it, you know,
twice.
Multiple times.
Right.
Not a good thing. Then you get back to a fractional reserve system. So these miners came together in a matter of minutes. I think it was less than half an hour. And they all decided, okay, we're going to reject that blockchain and we're going to follow this one. So they're a very cohesive group. More recently, about 2 months ago, I think it's called GHash, a particular miner that was the biggest miner. There was a possibility that their pool of mining equipment was going to actually put them over that magic 50% rate into 51% of the hashing power.
And what was the name of them?
I believe it was GHash, the letter G-H-A-S-H, GHash, I'm pretty sure. But basically, they, you know, pulled back from the ledge because
the perception problem. Panic. That might have been what Jonathan was talking about. And the fact that anyone could even be in that position, I'm going, I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy about this.
Exactly, because you can become subject to intimidation and coercion and confusion.
Or corruption. Okay, I'll give you all right, go ahead and finish your thought, and I want to share something with you. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, you know, I'm trying to speak to people, at least on a one-to-one basis, just to be not so quick to embrace the narrative that's currently being played out. Because a lot of people are getting misperceptions. Like, for example, earlier you referred to the representative from the Canadian government that was at that New York Bitcoins conference, right? I fully understand why you interpreted her as being a government rep, but she's actually a private lawyer that is sort of giving this only one perspective and sort of chastising folks for referring to Bitcoin as the Wild West and saying, you know, her sources, the Canadian government, are expressing displeasure with that characterization. Really? You know, who cares? So, you know.
Well, she was saying the same thing along with the aide from Schumer. That they're going, well, if you go saying that Bitcoin is, you know, like really free, well, then there's going to be a government agency that's going to prove to you it's not. They do not want to have where it's out of, you know, if you're not in control, then you're out of control. And they don't want to give that perception. And I'm going, why? That was the whole reason it had, you know, my support to begin with. And they're going, nope, we don't want that perception. And I'm going, okay, why? I mean, I'm like, there's something weird going on.
Ernie, I if you can indulge me, I got to go back to that congressional aide whose name was, I have the program here, John Collins, I do believe. And I mean, those for me were shocking words. He put a quote up. I don't know if you were present during that presentation or not, but he put a quote up from an American congressman, I think Cantor, C-A-N-T-O-R or maybe T-E-R, but Cantor, I'm pretty sure, was the name. And the words that he was quoting, which with such passion and glee, sounded like Mussolini in the early 40s speaking to Italians, and essentially like a fascist dictator, okay? And the words were essentially this. He was saying to the innovators of the Bitcoin community, I cannot row the boat of innovation for you. You must do the hard work. You must row the boat. I will steer the ship.
No. I was there. And I think it wasn't Schumer's aide, you know? I think he referenced Candor, but I remember that. But this is what he said. He goes, if you don't demonstrate enough deference to the government and kiss our ass, then you get nasty letters from Schumer saying how he doesn't like it. And I made the comment, I think, I don't know, you may remember me doing this. I would have paid Schumer to say something like that. Hell, that's when it went up in value, you freaking morons. They don't understand what they're saying. And they're getting right. Some kind of secret behind, knowledge. They got some, because when I talk to these guys and I go, you guys don't understand. I mean, do you guys understand that, you can't stop me trading Bitcoin at the Starbucks with the 13-year-old. You're going to have to make your, whatever you design or plan that you got, you have to make that kind of activity illegal or money laundering, or you're not allowed, because that is where, I mean, hell, that's what I thought. Because I remember Eric Voorhees, when he was doing BitInstant and all that kind of stuff, before he ran off to Panama or whatever, he's going, oh, Ernie, we got to have, wide adoption, and we got to, everybody's got to, you don't want to have the where you got to go get all your Bitcoin at Starbucks. And I go, well, why not? Hell, that's what I thought it was going to be. Oh, no, you need to be able to interface with the bank and do it. I'm going, why? And that's been their mindset, because they're looking for this wide adoption. It increases the value of it. You get all kinds of, because I talked to Paul Snow. Paul Snow and Rafael Rodriguez doing the Texas Bitcoin Conference. They come to the Freedom Summit. They wanted to hook up and, meet with, Patrick Byrne, from CEO over Overstock, and Cody Wilson was speaking there, and Davi Barker and MK Lords, all the, Bitcoin Nut Bombs. And they wanted to have some, see what was going on there. We're at the party, we're drinking, pounding back some beers and everything, and we're all kind of loose and having a good time. And I go, look, Paul, I get it, I understand. When it gets wide adoption, all of a sudden Bitcoin shoots up in value, and you're Wolf on Wall Street yacht. I get it. But we're going to fund Liberty Prize. I said that. I know you'll come back. Oh, but look at all the resources the Freedom Community would have. Yada yada yada. I'm going, yeah. I've never heard this stuff before, and I'm going, I understand what you're saying. I just don't agree. I am not about, I need some kind of sanction from the man. Larkin Rose kind of thing. You see my point? So I'm going, all right. Now, this is the one thing I wanted to share with you that I got the EBGBs of. What's his name? Dan Johnson from BitAngels. You know who I'm talking about?
David
Johnson. Sure. David Johnson of BitAngels. Nice guy. Like him. Seems, personable. It's all cool. I talked to him, and I'm going on about, where's the anonymous factor of Bitcoin? I was given the impression that it's all anonymous. It's not. And I go, this is, now, even in the paper, people, they'll send me the paper. See, right here, it says it's not anonymous, or it's pseudo-anonymous, semi-anonymous. And I go, it's not anonymous. Now, when you're talking to people, out, the layman out here, and you go, ooh, it's anonymous, I do, and nobody knows. No, yeah, they do. Now, little stuff, they probably don't care, but that doesn't mean that they can't, do the, well, they have to do this, retroactive of what account and ISP to the phone that can, and then maybe they can kind of find out who it is. And I'm going, yeah. And this coming from, the government NSA that can track any and everybody's communication of everything forever, and it's in the archive of, those people, they wouldn't be able to do that or have the desire to retroactively go get it when they want to get you. And I'm going, no, no. It may not be hard-coded into where it goes and it says, like you're saying, a bit license or something to do Bitcoin, but it might as well be, okay? So I'm just going, okay, so they can. So they go, well, it's not hard-coded. I'm going, what's the difference? If they can, they are, so I'm, all right. So, yes, you can be anonymous. Yes, you can put on disguise. Yes, you can go down to the cafe internet thing. Yes, you can use cash. Yes, you can, use your USB. I hear all this stuff. And these guys, I go into Texas Bitcoin Conference, and David Johnson, he sits there and he says, hey, I know who you need to talk to. You want anonymous, or we'll go over here. Now they go, well, you just, and computer geeks always say that. Well, you just, and I'm looking for the just button on my keyboard, and I go, yeah, where's that just button? okay? You're so full of crap, your ears stink. There is no just button. What I need is an app that I push it, and then it just does what I just want, and it's a just button. But until you get the just button, don't sit there and tell me how I got to tour this and bit that and go and back and do an anonymous and Linux and what. You know, it's not a just button, okay? So I made that presentation at the hacker thing, and I said, who here have all these different hacker stuff that are building these different applications on Bitcoin? Well, you have all these investors and angel guys sitting there with BitAngels. And they're going, you know, hey, we got a bunch of applications, cool things. We have, you know, this Bitcoin taxi service that they can't shut down. We got the decentralized of the, we register the whatever. All this cool stuff. I'm like, cool. Peace out, man. That's a, you should do that. And I go, why is it that we don't have an anonymous factor? You know, the dark wallet, you know, that Cody Wilson was going on about. Why is that not freaking front and center available? Why? I don't understand.
Yeah. Well, Ernie, you are on to a beautiful topic right there.
Okay, now let me finish this. I want make a note, you know, of what you were going to say, because I want I don't want you to lose your thought. I'm sure. Okay, it's a good one, but let me finish this point. And this is what I'm trying to tell other people, that you know they're supportive of this. They see the applications that are come. You know, and I'm not tech savvy. I don't know. I just know. I'm just looking for the features. You know, what's the intrinsic value of Bitcoin? I don't know. Whatever gold and silver I'm willing to pay to get its features. I mean, you know, it's worth that. You know. So I'm going. But so when I made the presentation to these guys, I'm going, why is that not done? I mean, I know what the rhetoric is. We don't want to have to where you can do drug deals anonymous. We don't want to have where you can get hookers anonymous. We don't want you to do child pornography. We don't want you to do bioterrorism. We don't want you to do white slavery. We don't want you to, we, you know, that would be bad. So we're not doing, I go, you know, that is not what the man, you know what, all of a sudden the government's moral as they're laying waste to freaking entire regions. You know, they don't give a shit about us. You know, that's not what their thing is. They don't want opposition. They don't want dissent. They don't want freedom. Okay? So I'm going, what I need is to be able to use my resources. That's why I always got this campaign finance. Bitcoin might as well is getting to where it might as well be campaign finance laws. Because what we're doing is we're running a campaign for governor here. A good friend of mine, I said, you know, what happens if you just put a Bitcoin QR code up on your sign? And it goes, what? How do you log that? You know, who even knows? You know, how much you get $1 million there, they're going to freak out. And you go, hey, man, I just put the QR code that goes to, you know, my pet dog. What do you care? You know, they're going to, they have to regulate it in some way. And they don't want, is it property? Is it currency? They're playing this dance. And it's all about your freedom to be able to express your support for something in opposition of the man. And they don't want that. I go, that's why I need anonymous donating for like Larkin as a neon flashing example. So they go, okay, oh yeah, we could do something. All of a sudden, I get a report. They were giving out $250,000 awards or contracts or whatever they were calling it as an incentive for these coming up with some kind of applications. They're doing a million. They decided to give five prizes, so it was $1.25 million. One of those things was, you know, one that I thought was cool is kind of a Bitcoin-based taxi server, whatever. But the one that I wanted, they said, anonymous. Yep, Ernie, you win. This guy got this group right here you talked to, $250,000 project, and they're going to do the anonymous donating kind of cool. And I'm like, yep, who's your new best friend? Make sure that I know about it. I want to promote it. I want to use it. We'll make sure it gets promotion on the site. We'll do the Lark and Roll thing. Rock and roll, dark wallet. Let's go. Then I see the same guys, you know, Johnson and some of the other guys on that team at New York Bitcoin Conference. I go, so how's that coming along? How'd that do? Well, they kind of got us off that project and moved us over into something else. And I'm going, really? I'm so shocked. Okay. So I'm going, so what? They just, you know, said, we'll give you the money if you work on something else. I mean, so it didn't happen. It didn't work. And I wanted an announcement of the winners. I couldn't find it. I wanted to promote. Look, this is what won. This is what we can expect. This is what's coming. Don't see it anywhere. BitAngels did the whatever. It's just like they were just looking for resources. They were looking for hackers. They were looking for code monkeys. They were looking for something to do some other stuff that they were doing. I was talking to Paul Snow about it. He has, you know, encrypted operating system that he's working on to do in next year or two, do some kind of a made safe operating system, something. I don't know what it was, but he was happy to have these hackers there for them to use as a recruiting tool. And I'm going, okay, that's, you know, at least you got some benefit out of that as they lost money on their Texas Bitcoin thing. So I'm going, all right, so I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy that they really were sincere about providing the anonymous thing. Why? Then I find out that when a lot of people use the Tor or BitTorrent or whatever the hell, you know, this deep web, whatever the heck, I find out, you know, from doing shows that the BitTor is kind of was naval intelligence. It's how that they can do. And you have 90 whatever percent of the traffic on the Internet is through the Tor. And I mean, the Onion browser, I'm going, really? Well, how come we don't have BitTwitter? Why is it we don't have, when they Turkey shuts down the activists in the streets, and they say, no, we can't do that. Tehran, right when you need it the most, right when you got the Bundy Ranch thing going on, and, you know, cell phones are off, and you're not allowed, and Twitter shut down, and the cell phone tower, I go, whoa, 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 time out. How come we don't have a Tor-based, you know, a Twitter thing that they can't find or shut down or do? Why? Why? I don't understand. Why? Well, there is a foundation that has funding that comes in, and they influence what things get done first and what order of different kinds of applications. Really, how's that done? Who's the biggest funder? The U.S. freaking government. And I go, really? I'm so shocked. So now we know why you don't have BitTor freaking Twitter, because the government is not on top of their list. So when I saw that they were going to do the anonymous application for Bitcoin at the Texas Bitcoin Conference, they go, yeah, yeah, we got it taken care of, Ernie. You know, shut Ernie up and go away, Ernie. And all of a sudden, I show up in New York. I go, how's that going? Well, we got influenced and we're funded on something else. I'm going, you know, if this isn't neon flashing what I'm talking about, so is BitAngels part of the, you know, the direction of where the development goes? Are they part of the foundation? Yes, they are. So I'm going, okay, they're kind of sympathetic to that. They want wide adoption. They're carrying the water for. So I'm going, all right. So which is why I was so supportive of MadeSafe, okay? That it is, SafeCoin is not on the blockchain. It is separate from it. It's not, they were doing cryptocurrencies years before even the blockchain came out. But it was the blockchain that gave people the understanding and the street cred for what they wanted to do. Are they, so I asked David on air, I'm going, I did three shows with him. I'm going, look, you know, this foundation thing that you, who are you guys? Are you just like Mozilla or something? You're trying to, I'm supposed to trust you? Well, we're going to go and develop until we're not needed. Then we back off. It's done and peace out. Okay. We'll see how that works out. But I'm telling you, at its core, all the signs from an experienced activist, from somebody that just knows where you know, you smell the bullshit. I smell a whole shitload of Bitcoin bullshit. And I'm going, where is this coming from? You know, so now we have the aid, and they're doing all this. We are going to control. We got to be nice with that. And one final thing, I was talking to, they had three attorneys up there talking about what they're going to do with Bitcoin. I'm going, you're going to have to make it illegal for this private trading thing. I mean, is that what you're going to do? And I got the impression they're looking at me, you know, like I didn't know if they were uninformed or they're looking at me like I was an idiot. I was uninformed. I got the impression they're like, boy, we already got control of Bitcoin. We already know what the end game is. Of course, why do you think we're here? Why do you think we're doing this development? Why do you think we're co-opting the young guy? Why do you think? Because it's already done. And I go, all right, I need to know how they're doing it. Jonathan tells me, well, 50 plus 1%. Then you find out, what is it? G Nash miner group would be the 50. We probably don't want to do that. That looked bad. And I'm going, okay, so now we're screwed. So anyway, that's kind of my walk through this. And what I was trying to tell some of the other guys, and they're going, well, you don't know. And I go, no, I don't look for the code. I wouldn't know what the hell I was looking at. Neither would you anyway. What's in the blockchain, you know, the code and the open source and the, you know, mind changing foundation of what the hell. I can just see, can they? Well, if they can, then they are, in my opinion. All right, you go ahead and the point that I interrupted you, you had a good point there. Now it's your monologue. Go.
Yeah, I mean, you're hitting all the key points from our perspective, and it's getting the word out there. First off, you know, if you're reading from their posture that the game is over and they already have effective control, that might be their posture, but I don't think that's the reality. The game's not quite over yet. And we got to keep trying to clarify things, but it's very nuanced what's going on here. So you make reference, for example, to BitAngels. That's a good example. I mean, BitAngels attracts some really wonderful people who are doing some great work within the Bitcoin space. However, they are, to a degree, handcuffed. I'll give you an example. David Johnson's founding partner is a guy, Michael Turpin. And he, you know, has a very solid technical background. He's an innovator himself. He started MarketWire, which, you know, was the modern Gutenberg press, right? He bi-stepped all the big media outlets and just used the internet with MarketWire to get people's press releases out in an effective way, a cost-efficient way. You know, great innovator. But I asked him, and this was on the record, it was being filmed at Startup Grind in Toronto, at a hosted a law firm up here, a very pointed question. The question was, will BitAngels fund a startup with great technology and great promise that is proactively non-compliant? And his answer was, not in the United States. And I appreciate where he's coming from. I understand that, right? He's interested in maintaining his freedom of movement. you know, and I know they did back the, I believe they backed the ATM that was the first ATM in Canada to be deployed in Vancouver. I do believe that it was one of their angels funded that. And where did they deploy it? In Vancouver, you know, which is a good sign that at least they're not giving up on regulated innovation. But you see, so they're attracting serious money. And serious money likes to get very serious about the security of that money. And that's where the nuanced sort of influence of this is how things are going to be, you know, in this sort of soothing, calm way comes about. And it's unfortunate because it's happening all around us. The most promising stuff gets pulled in to some jurisdiction almost immediately. And I'm sure it's the venture capitalists and the angels that are concerned about A, legally what they're associating with, and B, with the foundational basis of the ability of their capital to grow. But the game's not over, okay? I mean, I make two very simple points to people when we get into this kind of discussion in terms of looking at the future of Bitcoin. And one is really obvious and simple, and that is cash. Cash trades and transacts at a premium. Right. And what I mean by that is if someone's prepared to pay cash for something.
Discount.
Right. Discount automatically. Right. Especially if it's in the private sphere. So that's the deal with cash. It trades at a premium. Well, Bitcoin is digital cash. And as long as there's a space, for example, like silent Bitcoin. What I'm doing, there's going to be 10,000 versions of this, I hope. In terms of coins that are based on this technology that are free of regulation. So Bitcoin will continue in Starbucks to trade at a premium, meaning there's going to be a market value that puts some importance on it. But that's minimally, and that doesn't really get me all that excited that Bitcoin is just digital cash. It's so much more. And what it is revolutionary. I mean, it has gone to this value in a free market, unregulated environment. And that tells us something. And what it tells us is that if it's not interfered with, that trajectory of innovation is going to be phenomenal. So now, if there is a breakaway, if there's essentially a fork of Bitcoin or some version of Bitcoin that is not regulated, then there's going to be innovation that's going to continue on over there. That's our job, to make sure that that innovation coming out of the free market space is superior in its utility to people.
See, this is the thing that had me concerned. Jonathan said, Mohan, he goes, well, Ernie, we got to fight for, you know, whatever, and we got to be involved and fix and do and be part of. And I'm going, my initial reaction is if I got to, because I've been a political activist for a long time, and I'm going, you know, that's what they want. They want you to vote. They want you to run. They want you to write your congressman. They want you to influence call your legislator. They want you to waste your effing time. Okay? And I'm like, if I got to fight, then I'm in the wrong freaking battle. I don't want to have to fight. That's not. I'm not fighting. You know, I'd just go and get me a bunch more silver. You know, I'm an unfighting individual. Well, you know, it's and people go to me. They go, Ernie, you've been saying silver's going to shoot up when it hadn't. I know this stuff's manipulated. They say, no, it's not. And it's just a matter of. I go, you don't mind if I just continue to accumulate some silver, because I choose personally to accumulate my wealth in silver. Well, what happens? Well, I'll do the trading in Bitcoin because I think it's freaking awesome and how easy it is to use. But it's not just the Bitcoin for financial transactions. It's the concept to be able to record data that makes government irrelevant. All of a sudden, there goes the county recorder. All of a sudden, there goes, you know, the titles for your cars. All of a sudden, there goes a whole bunch of, you know, property right protection that people get blocked in their head that they need government for. Open source, a blockchain, all of a sudden makes that irrelevant. And we are the ones that determine how it's enforced. And we are the ones that determine, you know, whether it's valid or not. Because I got the county recorder's office out there. What are they doing? They side with, the bank they foreclosed and took and you already had it paid off and everything. Well, sucks to be you. Gavel goes down, you lose, you know, because we said. And I'm going, oh, who's we? Well, the government, and we decided, and we got guns and shiny badges. And I'm going, you know what? The saying this government is by, for, people, God, that's all BS. Well, this ability to use the blockchain and things like it for the kinds of things that we want to do, which Jonathan made a very good point of, is how your refrigerator owns itself, or a car, or taxi, or anything else. I'm going, the blockchain doesn't recognize if you're a person or a toaster. You know, I'm going, you know, this is cool. I mean, I can see the future is so filled with possibilities now, and because it's digital, you know, I don't want to be freaking hauling cash up or trusting a third party to manage, or a bank, when I'm doing some transaction with a mine on the moon. You know, I need to be able to have some kind of universal transaction with something that doesn't require a third party. So I'm going, this is enormous technology that frees mankind, not just from interactions with each other, but each other when you're on other planets. So I'm going, okay, I'm all in. I get it. Is Bitcoin it? At its foundation, is it it? It is a demonstration that it can be it, or something like it. But all of these hands, and who these secret people are, and how their influence and consolidation of influence and miners and accepting the nodes, and I'm going, you know, it's unhackable and unbreakable and corruptible right up until it's not. And I'm going, if they can, they will, and when it suits them the most. So I'm going, I'm not feeling comfortable about this. I mean, I would use it, and I got a couple, and I do. But, you know, my first opportunity, what I do? I take and I go buy SafeCoin with it for MadeSafe, and I win. I mean, so this is what I'm looking for, is the information. If you come across how the adoption or a influence or voting block of these people that are doing the sort, because that's one thing that they didn't tell me in the beginning, is that there was constant changes to the source code. I did not know that until recently. And I'm going, well, gee, I'm feeling all kinds of wonderful about that.
Yeah. And that's it. That's the big worry. And, you know, honestly, it doesn't look encouraging with what the majority voice is right now, because they're not even acknowledging that there are legitimate choices here, that Bitcoin can stay unregulated. That is a legitimate choice. So there's a minority of people. It's hard to put a figure on it, but maybe 20%. Perhaps less, likely less, but, you know, maybe as much as 20% that would like to see Bitcoin just completely not touched. But it seems to be the capital that is attracted to the space, or the prospective capital that a startup can bring in, that is persuading the players to just sort of throw the towel in and go, okay, we'll comply. You know, and some of them still feel very, very libertarian in their approach, you know, because they're just doing it in a minimal way, or they're doing it in a politically smart way where they're influencing what the rules are. But, you know, we got to keep up the good fight and maintain some free space, in this area. And, you know, if Bitcoin does complete licenses being employed for every transaction, there's going to be lots of other choice out there. And, yeah, you know, at the silentvault.com, we will be one of those choices, but there's going to be thousands of others. So it's going to be really exciting to see if we can, if the free market, I know it's going to prove itself, but it's going to be exciting to see how it all plays out.
Well, pay attention, you know, you can see why, you know, I was so crafting over years to get to this point of like the Larkin project. I mean, it just all, you know, overlaps, and it just kind of focal point of this is why we need this anonymity. I mean, this exactly. And your experience, you're going, yeah, Ernie's got a reason for it. Okay. And I remember when Bitcoin Not Bombs went to the San Jose Bitcoin thing, they were the only ones there. They were a freaking stick in the mud right there as they put on a Darth Vader outfit, and they're going, and they did a skit. If you look, Bitcoin Not Bombs, Darth Vader, you know, just look that up. And you'll see they did a skit at Pork Fest, but that was born at the San Jose Bit Conference. And what it was Darth Vader helmet guy going around with a Bitcoin on his chest. We need to tax Bitcoin. Make sure we get, so it was the Empire, you know, begging, please let us tax Bitcoin and everything. They did a whole skit, you know, at the Bitcoin, at the Pork Fest. And it was so fun. They were making fun of the foundation of them sucking up to the Empire, wanting to, oh, please, you know, let us be part of, you know, sanctioned by and, you know, whatever. So that's what they're going up to him. No, you're scaring away venture capitalists. You're making it evil and you shouldn't stop. So when Paul Snow and Rodriguez came to the Freedom Summit, they're like, well, and this is what Paul Snow said. He goes, Ernie, we need to give them the sense of confidence that it's not anything to be afraid of, that, you know, we're going to give them the red pill and wrap it in cheese so that they'll take it. And then you got wide adoption and everybody's going to be using it like cash, kind of sort of Starbucking anyway. And then the government, you know, will let it because they're not afeared. And I'm going, you're wrapping it in government cheese, man. I mean, I'm telling you, I don't feel good at when you dance with the devil, you don't change him. And I can see where this the mentality as an old Lovolutionary, an activist from back in the day, I see every single one of the same enticements that they're bringing people in. They think they got this great idea and they want to help and they're building and we're all going to be filthy, stinking rich, but only if you kiss the ring. And I am not a ring kisser. And I can see where this is going. So that's why I was so excited about MadeSafe. So I'm going to keep an eye on them too. But if SafeCoin is anonymous, if the distribution of all encrypted data, internet, and the entire, because I thought that's where the internet was going to go with the bulletin boards back in the early 90s anyway. I thought that's how we were going to have the internet. Well, they consolidated it in the World Wide Web and server thing, and then now it's starting to break off again with encryption that he already had this concept years before. Hell, they may have created Bitcoin just in anticipation of MadeSafe. I mean, you see my point?
Yeah, sure. And MadeSafe, yeah, I'm very impressed with what I'm hearing. I need to dive a little bit deeper to see exactly what's there. But the promise, if they can execute on the theory, is going to be phenomenal. And it seems to have the right guys behind it.
Well, you gave me a lot of names and people I could have on and talk and get some more information on this. And thanks for going later with me, because and it really answered a lot of things. I still need to get more details on this stuff, but it didn't make me less fearful.
Right. And what I will do is I will follow up with you. I'm going to follow up with you with some more technical information on Silent Bitcoin. Perhaps, you know, when you review that, you might feel that it would be useful for your P2P funders, because that's what you've accomplished with your crowdsourcing there, that are funding Larkin and some of the other chaps in there in your marketplace. Maybe you'll suggest Silent Bitcoin, because it certainly would be useful. And it's brilliant the way you structured that, because at the end of the day, it's just a P2P financial support between two individuals, and you're not actually benefiting in a financial way, or you have no residual equity in any of these projects.
None. And I did that on purpose because I understand how these guys think. And they go, why would you do it? Let me think. I get more freedom. I mean, you know, gee, what a concept. And that's what we're supported by, people that support that. And the other benefit is I give them a voluntary opportunity to, you know, send me some Bitcoin or money for doing it. I mean, I'm counting on them to, you know, like a little something for the home team, but it's not connected. So the Larkin, because you're a supporter of Larkin, you understand my motivation. You understand why, you know, I'm glad we had this talk and we got to get, so you can use this opportunity as an example of how Silent Vault would, could, should be used for exactly this kind of thing. Okay? So this would be a good project for you to use as an example to craft it, and so we can do anonymous, you know, save the planet, support Larkin.
Absolutely.
That would give you big street cred, man, right there.
Yeah. We stumbled on a wonderful example, wonderful teaching example.
Yeah, no, it's serendipity, man. The planets have aligned. All right, hey, you know, thanks for spending all this extra time with me, Sean. I really, really appreciate it. And you got some new news, or I got questions, or whatever. And I really appreciate you helping me understand a lot of this and let me express myself. And you're kind of, I mean, you know, it's, I mean, you know, there's a lot of great stuff about Bitcoin. I don't want to detract from that. It's just that, I mean, you understand my concerns, and I'm glad that you at least understand what I'm concerned about.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing. We can't be naive. We can't be naive in terms of our financial care, control, and custody over our assets. And we can't be naive about the political forces that are at play. But Ernie, it's been a real honor to be on your show. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, Donald will be sending you these links, and you can do what you want with them. And I learned something. Hopefully some other people out there plow through the hours of that. How long was it? It was like a lot extra, but that is good stuff. This is what we need to know. Thank you, Sean. Peace, brother.
We'll be in touch. Peace. Bye.